does impact on our work. But this is the Auditor General's office, expected of it. To be prudent and to be professional and to be ethical. So far we have not heard of any reason to doubt that. So when departments of government are to begin to contest the findings of the Auditor General, that to us brings some, if you like, red flag. It is something that we must at all costs avoid for a simple reason, this being a Chapter 9 institution. It has a responsibility. It has not faltered over the years as far as we are concerned. So we have a responsibility, therefore, of keeping that good name of that good organization. It is in our interest, best interest, as a country and also as government departments. As a Chapter 9 institution, expected of it is to perform its role and perform it well. It has been the case, in our view, it continues to be the case. We all know that we have been going through all sorts of problems with the department. And for the department to begin to find faults elsewhere on its own problems, that to us is not acceptable. We therefore need to tread carefully in our engagements of our daily duties as professionals. So I thought, let me just throw those words as we begin, because they really worry us. They worry us, if otherwise we simply can't find ourselves on a downward spiraling process towards being a banana republic, where everything is contested and where there is no law, where there is no regulation. I'm not suggesting that you are in that space as yet, or even in that space. But we have a responsibility. We have to be responsible professionals in our respective jobs. I thought, let me just make those few words, members, as we are to be allowing the Auditor General, because we have to insist on himself to be present with us, having heard and not at all doubting the professional work that the officials are engaged with. We have been happy, we continue to be happy, but we thought, let's escalate this process to this point where we invite you in person. Come and join us. Okay, Mr. Person.
Chairperson, I fully agree with you. I just want to add one thing. I think there's a breakdown in a trust relationship between ourselves and the department as well. Because issues that we were informed yesterday by the SIU, the department, on numerous occasions, we requested the department to be honest and open with us, and that didn't come forward. And that's something that we really, as a committee, need to take drastic measures on to get this trust relationship back on track. I just wanted to add that, Chairperson.
It's okay.
What will be important so that our engagement becomes a fruitful engagement will be for the department. You'll recall, Chair, why I'm raising this point first. This is informed by our ongoing, the work that we're currently busy with on the BRRR. We identify this standoff between the department and the Auditor General. We then said that we'll invite the Auditor General to clarify us on some of those issues, but it will be a general presentation. It will be important for the department to make a presentation to inform us as to where they are on the issues that they said they're going to contest them with the Auditor General. It will be very important, Chair. The reason that I'm raising this point, Chair, is that it was at the highest level of the department. You'll recall that the minister in the meeting we had at the G26 raised this point of not being happy about the work that has been done by the Inspector General. But again, the water trading entity, well, I'm not very much conversant with the names of the people in that particular area, but this person was suspended, who then came back and who's the one who was leading. I can't remember, is that the CEO or the CFO?
CFO.
And I hope he's here, because for us to have a fruitful discussion is to have such individuals, so that, you know, we're able to get the detail of where the differences are and what are those issues. We also have to make a report at the end of the chair, and we have to make recommendations out of that report. So it's important that there's ongoing work of the DRRR. We have the very same people. I'm not sure that the acting DG, yesterday in our engagement, Chair, it was clear that the acting DG did not even have a brief on the SIU by the acting DG. And it became very difficult for him even to participate on issues that require the department to respond. Again, we're dealing with the Auditor General again today here, Chair. It will be correct maybe to hear from the department, the acting DG again, that are going to be engaged on. The acting DG will be able to respond and to engage on those issues. Not because I'm undermining the, what you call, but I'm saying that in the last experience that we have seen, Chair, is that the acting DG was never briefed. And it's wrong, obviously, that someone comes to Parliament and the acting DG is supposed to, when they appoint that person and send him here, they're supposed to give him a brief so that Babu Masangu becomes relevant to the engagement. If he's not briefed, then why do we have the department here? So I want those clarities, Chair, and then so that we have a meaningful engagement. My worry is that we'll end up having the Auditor General speaking here and giving us his issues as we understand them. And then from the department will not even be able to respond, but they have a send-off. So we need those clarities so that we know that we're going to have a real engagement today.
Makaula.
Ngibonge sihlalo. Eyi, nami ngizwa nginokuphatheka kambi ngoba uma uthi uyabheka into enza kulo kuleli komiti ayikho neyodwa thina fanele siyibambe. Njengokuthi uyabona manje sinikezwa omunye acting DG. Okuzothi uma kukhona into afanele siyibuze, uthole ukuthi akazi uzophendula thini. Ngenxa yokuthi ikhona lento lena thina esingayanza, abangafuni ukusitshela yona eyinkinga. Ngoba phela if uma benenkinga fanele babuyele kuthina sihlalo, bakwazi ukuthi basitshele no sinenkinga ka-1, 2, no-3. Even izolo besikhala ngayo le nto ukuthi yabona le ndaba ukuthi lo mnyango lo awuperform ngendlela efaneleyo. Kuney'nkinga ey'nkulu kabi kulo mnyango, but still asiboni thina ukuthi basithatha njengabantu abayiphathi yalo mhlangano. And bengizocela mina sihlala ukuthi ngenye linye ilanga la ke sikhombisa besichaze kahle kabanzi ukuthi inkinga bikuphi njengoba besibhizi besifakela lo sathi nangu lo uTTG lo acting DG egcineni awusababoni futhi. Ngiyabonga.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm worried about this committee. There's also they are always having a new DG each and every time they come to us. If there are problems with the department, they are supposed to inform us. Even yesterday, we could see that there's a lot of problems in this department. I request that the department should tell us so that we become part and parcel of the whole deal. Thank you.
Nature's call for the deal, for the Auditor General. When nature calls, uh, Clearly, if he had already begun a process, so he would have been excused or allowed us to move forward. That we still have to get. Moreover, that we, many or other instances of this nature are very few when we are going to get the Auditor General himself coming before a committee. I would really urge us maybe just to allow that 1-2 minutes and then we start as soon as he comes through.
While I wait, can I ask a question to the department?
Chairperson,
we received this document that was sent to the Auditor General on the 31st of July. We received it now. Now, we had numerous, there was numerous occasions for the department to bring this document before us. Why do we get it today? Why is it that this department, you know, it just shows the leadership within the department. We get everything on 99. Now, it's not a new document. There's a date. It was sent to the Auditor General. Now it's being handed out to us. We could have received this when we had the first report, when the Auditor General presented the report and when the CFO of the water trading entity was very disturbed about the outcome. This could have been given to us. It could have been explained to us. It could have been discussed. Now giving it to us is not going to help us anyway.
Maybe point being noted, Mr. Person, maybe we should allow the Auditor General to take us through. And perhaps part of that taking us through should also entail taking us through on the processes involved in the actual audit, until a point where findings are to be made, rightly or wrongly, so that we get a sense as to what processes are involved that the Auditor General and his team work on for them to arrive at any signing off, if I may use those words, of that audit report. It shall assist us in getting a fairer sense of how the processes unfold. And also, when you are going to have any department saying we're contesting on this one, we shall have been clearer or rather clarified on how and what processes unfold in all of these exercises that we can be engaged in. Okay. Mr. Mokoto, sir, the floor is yours. And your team.
Thank you very much, Chair. And thank you for inviting us to this engagement. While I was waiting for the chair to call me, a couple of things happened, and one of them is that my iPad just went off power. So while I'm trying to start speaking, I'm trying to come up now on the connection. Chair, I think it's a wonderful opportunity for us to have this chance to engage you on the audit process, particularly in the light of what you have described, and that is the extent of pushback and subsequent non-ownership of matters that are contained in an audit conclusion. Firstly, I think you are right in guiding us to first quickly appraise and remind the members of what exactly is involved in an audit process. As far as we have experienced it, not only here in government, but also in other institutions outside government, over many years, this routine and this discipline of auditing is a time-tested process that normally at certain stages can be quite superficial in how it evaluates the activities of an institution under audit. But over time, as it gears up and it gets more insight into some of the prominent risks in any environment, it also has got the capacity to be quite deep in what it does and engaging on the issues in the financial statements. What we're going to do today, Chair, we're going to paint the picture of the journey of our experience in the audit of water affairs as well as the water trading entity over a period spanning some 7 to 8 years, you know, so you can also start looking at a trend so that the people who are contesting today's outcomes do not think these are occurrences of yesterday. That's important as a fundamental foundation for understanding where the audit comes from. Let me start from where you asked me to. And that is that every year, as all of us remember, there's always a process where the department brings forth its plans, which are normally aligned to the medium-term strategic framework, and it presents those and asks for money to do those things. Ours is to come after they have put the hand in the pocket, if you like, and spend the money. Never come before they've put the hand in the pocket. We normally come when they put the hand in the pocket, took the money from the public purse, and went and spent it to whoever it is that they are interacting with towards the implementation of their programs. That's only time that we come in. And the law requires us to do that every year, unfortunately, so that we can independently check whether all that was done according to the monies that were spent was in accordance with the rules and the specifications that are set out in government in the area of financial management. So that's why we come and do these audits. And we do them with a very open mind, knowing that in the midst of all the things that happen, there are multiple numbers of hands that have to transact on a daily basis with third parties, contract programs and projects with big engineering firms in particular, if one looks closer to this department. And so when we come in and do our assessment, we come there without any preconceived idea about anyone who they may have transacted with. We just come across the transactions as they are recorded in the accounting records. And normally, you know, the transactions in the accounting records are often in the debit side of the T account, because when you spend, you credit bank, and you must put the debit somewhere in your books. And the auditors are going to look for those debits in the books to check back to the physical evidence of the transaction that is purported to have taken place based on the debit that is in the books. That's what we do in an audit. So it's far from an investigation. It's far from looking deeper and deeper and deeper into people behind the transaction. All we are interested in is the transaction and the external confirmation of the transaction, which normally comes in the form of somebody issuing an invoice against you. That person must be persuaded by ill intent if they are going to generate an invoice without substance, because there's got to be another party within the institution that must put that transaction into the accounting records so that it can generate a debit, which is what we started picking up in the books. I'm saying this so that we can begin to distinguish between the person who writes the books and what triggers that person to write the books, because the reality is that the documents that they use to write the books are not generated internally within the department, because the department does not trade with itself. It trades with somebody outside. So if you look at the hierarchy of reliability of evidence, it is an old discipline in auditing that externally generated documents have probably got a higher chance of reliability than internally generated documents. So, when we raise findings, whether on irregular expenditure or otherwise, it is either because that externally generated document does not make sense or did not exist in the first place. That's what the audit is trying to bring to light. So that those people who were approving the transaction at the beginning when the budgets were agreed can also have a line of sight into what the independent assessment of the accounting records has to say. That's where we come from. So then it suggests that if somebody is pushing back, one, it may mean that they have got alternative corroborative evidence to fill the gap that the auditors are purported to have. Let me say it again. If somebody believes that they have a chance to push back effectively, then it is incumbent upon them to produce the alternative corroborative evidence that they believe is going to satisfy the auditors towards the objective the auditors are testing. The rest is noise. I think if I cut to the chase, that's what it is in black and white. Any accounting officer who has a reason to believe that their pushback carries weight against the independent assessment of an auditor, they must be invited to produce that alternative corroborative evidence that closes that gap. Alternatively, they must demonstrate why that finding of the auditors must be dismissed. Can't be the auditors who must prove to themselves why they have made a finding. Because the auditors have taken the first step to make a finding, and if somebody has got other evidence to suggest that this finding is not to be believed, they must maybe assist us. Secondly, Chair, what I wanted to also say while I'm dealing with the issue of the substance of the audit is that the audit will never come to a reasonable conclusion for as long as one of the parties in the audit is wobbly. Wobbly in the sense that we have got slides to show in the presentation, elements and extent of levels of instability over a significant number of years. Now, a lot of this stuff, because it's project-driven, it's got medium, long-term deliverables with third-party service providers outside, surely when somebody who was presiding over the programs and the adoption of the contracts as well as the management of the accounts and the payments of the bills, when that person is gone after 6 months in the job and somebody else comes another 8 months in the job and then another one follows that one for 15 months and another one is back there again for another 9 months and then another one is missing in action and then you look back over 8 years and you realize that there have been 9 people in this particular job over this short-term period of time. How could anyone with the best intentions and the hand in their heart clearly say that they have absolute confidence in the suggestion that what is happening in year number 8, even though it builds up from 8 years ago, is true, if they are sitting in a position of an accounting officer making that suggestion? So, Chair, the bottom line is that once there are those broken elements in an audit, some people will have the guts to want to challenge stuff that they themselves may not even have the ability to produce evidence for. So that's where I think we're coming from in relation to this. And my colleague, who is the key person in this audit, we prepared a presentation if it's necessary for us to present it, but I don't think we will present all of it. But there are specific matters contained in the presentation which speak to financial management disciplines. Some of them speak to our assessment of the delivery of certain programs. Because this is unlike the financial statements of other private sector institutions where you prepare financial statements towards a bottom line. The financial statements here are prepared towards assessing whether the services that ought to have been delivered or the facilities and the tools that ought to have been bought towards the delivery of services, have they been bought or not? Or have they been bought at a cost that could potentially be far excessive compared to the normal rates that operate in a particular industry. Because we drill down to that, otherwise an audit will be meaningless if you just chase the mechanical debits and credits as they go into the accounts. You got to know what was that debit that went into account 901 for 10 million, nobody reconciling it, but the 10 million remains there. Are we going to call that a sundry data in the books, or are we going to call it an asset? Which asset? Where is it? Has somebody seen it? Can we vouch for the fact that that asset is worth 10 million? Those are the questions that auditors are meant to ask. So we cannot divorce, unfortunately, the mechanical execution of the accounting discipline from the fundamental qualitative deliverables that come on the back of the expenditures that trigger the credit in the bank account. That's the logic of an audit. And I guess accounting officers generally have an appreciation of that orientation of an audit and are sometimes expected to sometimes listen carefully to the caution that comes with the audit, because it is not coming as a package of conclusive statements about somebody's culpability. It is an exercise that is trying to point a finger at sometimes the dark corners that necessarily never get the shine of light. And I think it's important in the role of any accounting officer to know that there are areas where you need to shine the light in order for you to be able to report transparently and in a manner that is accountable. Chair, that's where we come from. If you want us to elaborate on any of the detail in the slide presentation, we'll do it with pleasure.
Proceed.
Maybe before you proceed, Chair, you may want to give us a guide on this document that comes from the department. At what point are we going to be interacting with this document after the presentation? Someone has tabled this document. What is the status of this document that is before us? It will be important so that we can then prepare ourselves, knowing that after this presentation, this is what is going to happen. Because I see a document that has been distributed here, and we don't know what it is.
The norm, the norm and the practice is that no document just gets distributed in a committee. That's the general norm. The norm has to be that if any document is to be distributed, it has to go via here. So that we just don't see a document being distributed here. So for now, let's take it that this is a document, we must just have it to ourselves for our own bedtime reading until it is formally submitted to us. If anyone wants from us to make reference to that, it's fine, but it's just for bedtime reading. In your absence, Mr. Chauke, Mr. Person made a point about this very same document you are making reference to that says this is information that we've always been waiting for, we've always been looking for. Only now it just suddenly crops up in a meeting situation in the manner in which it has, which is unacceptable. You still want to say something?
Jefferson, just on this document, the Portfolio Committee is not a referee between the department and the Auditor General. They must sort that out. We, at the end of the day, we will accept the Auditor General's report. It's for the department, as the AG said, it's for them to prove. Eventually, the document that will count is not what they're telling us, is what the Auditor General tells us about this part.
Let's allow the process. Let's allow the department to respond. I repeat, the document we have here is for your own bedtime read. until we formally get that document tabled. When it gets tabled, it has to go via the committee secretariat. We receive that. We take note. We see how we best take that whole process forward. For now, this is a document. Number two, we shall allow the Auditor General's team to take us through the process and then allow the department to respond. We are moving from a principle that says we cannot allow the Auditor General and its reputation to be tarnished. A lot is at stake. Our country is going through what it is going through. We cannot allow any process that takes us to a worse situation than we are as a country. It's time that we build levels of confidence in our institutions of ensuring proper governance and accountability. This is one of those institutions. Okay. AG and your team.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Morning, Honourable Members. I'll start with slide 7 that talks about the pushback by the department. We've noted that during the 2015-16 audit process, emergency projects was recorded in the department's books as irregular. Subsequent to that, at the SCOPA hearing, the department started pushing back around the declaration of irregular expenditure, indicating that they're now contesting all the irregular, even when it was disclosed in the financial books. On the audit process, last year, after the 2015-16 audit, we received a complaint from the water trading entity, and this year after the 15-16 audit, we received a complaint from both the water and sanitation department and the trading entity. On the next slide, we had to create some context around the complaints because the Public Audit Act allows for a complaint process. And as I said, it's the second year that we received a complaint from Water Trading Entity, and the first year we received a complaint from the department. All complaints are independently reviewed by our Ethics and Risk Unit to determine whether the complaint is valid or not. Now, the first complaint last year on the Water Trading Entity was concluded, and it was found that the audit report was factual. The second complaint this year is in the final stages to be concluded. And once we finalize it, we will first engage the department on our findings. And Chair, I believe that will be a good point then to engage the committee on the letter that was received, because we will then be in a position to engage you. Chair, on the history, as you talked about the history of the department, we thought it's necessary to indicate the challenges that the department has been having over the last few years. If you look at the audit outcomes, in that 8 years, there were for every entity, there was 1 year where they had an unqualified audit report. The concern that we have is the instability at DG level. As the AG has mentioned, since May 2009 to July 2017, there were 8 DGs, including the acting DGs. From a report that we received from the South African Institute of Race Relations, it indicates that 56 months of this 8 years, there were acting DGs in the department. It's more than 4.5 years of the 8 years people were acting in the DG position. Now, you will remember I shared with you the accountability cycle during the BRRR process. Now, if we look at the accountability cycle that says we plan, we do, we check, we act, that checking is compromised if your assurance providers are, if there's instability in your assurance provider level. Chair, we've also indicated the irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure on slides 12 and 13, and you will see the increase in both irregular expenditure and and fruitless and wasteful expenditure over the last 2 years. And this last 2 years is where we started to focus on the implementing agents that the department uses to conduct projects on their behalf. We've enhanced our audit methodology, as AG has spoken about, to make sure that we follow the money, we focus on the risks, and as the department is spending a lot of their money via the implementing agents, it was important for us to follow that money and make sure that due processes are followed by implementing agents and that they deliver on what was required by the department. Chair, so what we will do in our presentation, we're going to focus a lot on the what did we find during the projects and give you insights into those findings, as it will clarify why we believe that the department is, that there's irregular expenditure that have not been disclosed and that there's also fruitless and wasteful expenditure that needs to be investigated to determine the full quantum of what must be disclosed. I'm going to hand over to Andre Sekhetu to take us through some of the projects and the project detail, the findings on the projects, just to illustrate to you what we found on these projects. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Alice, DG, AG, and Honourable Chair. I'd like to maybe just before I get started on the detail, maybe just take us back again on the slide that Alice dealt with in terms of reflection. I think if Chair notices the trend there, you'll see the increase, the gradual and quite significant increase in the irregular expenditure in both the entities, or actually primarily on the department, over the course of the past three financial years. So you'll see, Chair, I mean, from about 330 million all the way to 4.2 billion in the space of just 2 to 3 financial years. And Chairperson, as Alice has alluded to, initially what happened, because we know we are government. Government is an expenditure-driven machine in order to achieve our objectives. We spend money in order to achieve our service delivery objectives. But in spending that money, we have to ensure that we comply with the supply chain management principles in expending the money, or as AG referred to, putting the hand in the pocket to spend the money. So at some stage, between 2011, 12 to 13, 14, there was a lot of irregular expenditure that was reported at the department and the entity themselves. But they transacted directly with the contractors. At some stage then, they started, because we reported a lot of irregular expenditure, they then engaged in the process of appointing implementing agents for business reasons, but also then in this effort to also deal with, you know, the procurement process, having the capacity for somebody to go and appoint the contractors now being the implementing agent. But you see, Chairperson, that has not yielded the desired results as well, because through the use, increased use of the implementing agents being the water boards, as well as some other implementing agents out there, the irregular expenditure has really increased exponentially to 4.2 billion. Just some context with regard to that. And we'll deal with the irregular expenditure wise disclosed to the department, even though the procurement processes were then engaged in by the implementing agent at the later stage as part of our slides. The fruitless and wasteful expenditure, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, you also note a similar trend where, you know, it's been stagnant throughout the years, but again, from the 14-15 financial year, it's just more than doubled to 64 million. And what's important to note with both these slides, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, is the fact that whatever the department has disclosed in the financial statements is also under contestation, because we are assessing that whatever they've disclosed is incomplete. Therefore, we are saying that there could be other potential irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure out there in the environment, which has not been fully accounted for in the annual report of the financial of the department and the trading entity in the respective pages. So, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, as AG and Alice has noted and mentioned, we went through an extensive process of looking at our methodology. I think the AG summed it up quite eloquently when he said, you know, otherwise the audit would be meaningless if we don't go and check that debit. Is it the asset? What is the asset? Where is it? What does that asset do? Is it achieving its service delivery objectives? Are you assessing it? Are you evaluating? Because it impacts a number of lines. If you don't assess it regularly, you won't know how to prepare for your repairs and maintenance budget, your operations budget. You won't know when to replace it. You won't know how many skills you need to assess and evaluate this asset. So it's important that process be engaged in. So it's not just a process whereby we take the invoices and we check and we tick off against the debits in that regard. So as part of that process, Honorable Chairperson, and also maybe by way of background with your indulgence, Honorable Chairperson, you recall last year when we did the BRRR briefing at the other hotel down in Cape Town, Honorable Chairperson and the Portfolio Committee raised quite specific concerns around the expenditures and certain projects. So in line with the improvement in the methodology, we also endeavored and promised to do a little bit more work in this area as well. To that effect, we then selected a number of key projects within this environment, and we had to subject subjected those projects to a number of the tests that we disclosed there on slide number 17. So, as AG mentioned, Honorable Chairperson, when we conduct an audit, the normal ticking and bashing, you know, you would look at what is reported, is it credible, is it reliable. But on this project basis that we then engaged in to add value, we also looked at all other aspects, for example, compliance. We didn't just focus on supply chain management. We looked, if there's a contract that's applicable on this project, did you adhere to those project principles? So even though financially you could have accounted everything correctly, but did you also comply with that aspect of the contractual arrangements as required by that contract? Predetermined objectives. Yes, you come and you report to Parliament or in your annual performance report that this target is partially achieved, therefore you've reported reliably, but what was your target? If you are partially achieved, you've also noted that as a red, as is something worthwhile for the Portfolio Committee to follow up. So we've done a more holistic reporting in terms of over and above just the normal ticking and bashing from a financial statement point of view. So what were the areas that we focused on? We focused on the budgeting process. So do you do proper upfront planning, needs assessment that will inform a proper budget? Because at the end of the day, you're going to come to Parliament and ask for money to go and implement these projects. So your budgeting processes must be accurate, they must be compliant, they must be proper. The second aspect is now that you've received the money and you're spending the money, are you spending them accordingly? So the debit that AG was referring to, but also in terms of are you accounting, is it invoice, are you getting some form of value for money in this regard? Then the third aspect was the compliance example I also used in my earlier deliberations by saying we don't just look at supply chain management. We look at if your contract you signed with your contractor says you must be done end of June, did you also adhere to that? So we also try and delve into a little bit more detail in that regard. And then finally, like I also mentioned with regards to the predetermined objective, we don't just look at how reliably you've reported. We also say, but hold on, your own milestone said, I must be done. So are you done? Is there anything worthwhile reporting? And some of the key findings, especially in the performance objectives area, related to multi-year projects where they were only included in the current year. So yes, we acknowledge you've included them. So compliance, you are fine in this regard because you've now adequately included them. But how do you only start taking a multi-year project in the current year when it's been running for 2 or 3 years? So then you also gave a sort of a red for management to go and focus, follow up in this regard. So the feedback we'll give you will be in line with those four areas on the left-hand side that says what was audited. So, Chairperson, just a quick synopsis of the key projects and the summary of the key findings. So obviously, Chairperson and our members, you know that, familiar that red means a problem and green means we couldn't find any significant matters that was worthwhile reporting to management in that regard. So you'll see the key 10 projects that we selected on the left-hand side and then the actual outcomes linked to those four areas. The big issue was especially on supply chain management and then obviously some of the multi-year projects which only started being checked in the current financial year. Now, maybe also worthwhile mentioning, you can't start checking a project which is a multi-year project in the current financial year because remember, like we mentioned earlier, you come to Parliament, you ask for certain money or certain funds to go and implement. So then your budget must always be aligned to your performance planning. So which means you're spending money which potentially the budget was not agreeing to your performance planning processes. They were not adequately linked in that regard. And then obviously in terms of budget, some of the projects had specific overspending. Chairperson, it's also worthwhile mentioning, as with the BRRR process, the detail of the 10 projects are also included towards the end of the slideshow as part of the pack that we've handed out. I'll now delve into the detail focus areas, the four focus areas, but linked to the specific project. Under the budgeting process, some of the key findings there were that we had multiple business plans as the scope changed throughout. So there's no proper budgeting process up front. Some of these items, you find that there was an emergency on the Giani project. We started at 94 million, and then a while later we added another 250 million or 248 million, and then the cost ultimately ballooned to about 2.8 billion. And then also, as part of the budgeting process, we report to you the spending for the current financial year. So on this project, They had budgeted 750 million for the current financial year, but the spending, the actual spending, it's already exceeded that, it's 915 million. So there's some concerns there that, that needs to be addressed in that regard. And then one project, which is the Mopani project, was completely not budgeted for. So spending was happening, but we couldn't link it to any form of budgeting. The current year spending was 98 million with a total spending on the project at 364 million to date. And then there were contracts which were, they went through the process, but they could not be awarded because of budget constraints as indicated by the department, and that's specifically on the Glen William Dam. I know there's specific sentiments around the Glen William Dam, but we are reporting based on the evidence that was provided to us at hand. And then again on the Northern Ntika bulk water scheme, slight overspend there in terms of the spending. Again showing maybe improper budgeting principles up front, so we don't know exactly what we're budgeting for, or we're not taking spending as it's happening throughout the process, and that's something that may be worthwhile for management to follow up on. Financial management is now where we check the financial management principles, the disciplines. Are you getting value for money? Has things been accounted for correctly? Are the debits making sense? Where are they recorded and accounted for? What we've noted here, which is of concern to us, were excessive project management fees, excessive professional fees, and excessive construction rates. What this basically means, Honorable Chairperson, is we looked at the invoices which were submitted. We looked at a particular month or particular timeline, period in time. We looked at, does it make sense based on what we are receiving here? A person can only work so many hours, but the invoices indicate a slight excess of hours which are charged. Or, for example, the rate. You are a professional at a certain level, but yet the rates you are charging are at a higher level than would be expected. And we'll have some more detail with regard to this towards the later part of the slide. What I'd like to just also highlight as part of the slide on slide 20 is the middle part where the department has opted to change its, the way it accounts for its grants as well. So in the previous financial, it was a more direct grant. Now they've chosen the option of having it an indirect grant. But that change doesn't just happen overnight because there are other resultant balances which also are affected, for example, like your commitments, your accruals, which are related to those projects which were ongoing, which then if you change the way you account for it, you also have to look at the resultant accounting of those components as mentioned. Before we get started on the compliance aspects, I think we mentioned it earlier that the department started making extensive use of implementing agents. The difference between an implementing agent and a contractor. A contractor, I come to you, I say I want to procure the following services. We engage with each other directly, we agree, we sign a contract, and you go and implement, and I will hold you responsible for delivery. An implementing agent is somebody I appoint you. Sorry, Honorable Basson, for looking like I'm pointing at you, but yeah, he's acknowledging it. Yeah. He's appointed now. He's appointed. Yeah. So we appoint an implementing agent. The implementing agent then assumes the responsibility of project management, delivery, making sure that things are happening, appointing the contractor to make sure that the project is running. That is normally done at the cost of a project management fee. So the implementing agent will only charge the department a management fee, and the rest of the expenditure is still then required to take place as per the normal prescripts. Why is that important? Because Treasury says, even though I appoint an implementing agent, that implementing agent is still required to comply with supply chain management prescripts when they appoint, at least at the minimum to what they have in what they are supposed to comply with, or what the department or the principal person who is appointing the implementing agent is required to comply with. So therefore, the implementing agent must make sure that when they appoint the contractors, they still follow the normal getting the three quotes or advertising the normal supply chain management processes. In the eventuality or in the event that we find that there's irregular expenditure or process has not been followed, that non-compliance is reported by the implementing agent if it's a government entity. So I'll say, you're supposed to get three quotes, you didn't get the three quotes. But that irregular expenditure, that resultant irregular expenditure is then reported in the books of the principal. So as a principal, the person who's carrying the expenditure and responsible for the service delivery, I will then have to disclose that irregular expenditure. And I think that's also hence you see that the department's irregular expenditure disclosure has spiked up. Now, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, we all know that things don't always go according to plan. Sometimes things will go haywire or there will be a real need and it will result in us not being able to follow proper processes as required. Now the legislation makes or provides for that, it caters for that, where in instances where you cannot go on proper supply chain management processes, the Treasury regulations allow for you to be able to deviate.
But there's a proper, clear set of guidelines which should be implemented in this regard. So there must be motivations, proper motivations, justifiable motivations in this regard. And you must be able to demonstrate this is the evidence that informed my decision at the time of making the decision. Because remember, you're going to make the decision, and if your documentation is scarce or sparse, when the AG comes to audit, or the auditors come to audit later on, they do not have that hindsight or the information that you evaluated when you took the decision. Hence, it's important that when you take the decision on the day, that it's fully motivated, there's a clear understanding of why it is impractical or whatever it is that we cannot go out on proper procurement processes. And then it's important that you also mention it I'll deal with it later on because I'm sure it's going to come up in a question. With regard to the actual compliance finding, Chairperson and honourable members, the biggest concern here was the supply chain management process which were not followed. As you alluded to earlier on, there was an emergency. The minister apparently conducted the site visit. There was a real need that was identified. There was instruction for us to address the need. Now, I'm explicitly mentioning this because at some stage, honourable Chairperson, when we were engaging the executive authorities and the administration on supply chain management transgression, they would always say, no, but I got an instruction from the executive authority, and hence I had to act. And then when we went to the minister's meetings and you say, Minister, you see this irregular expenditure is a result of the instruction as you are told by your official. And the ministers would say, sit back and say, but hold on, I said go buy the chair, there's a need to buy the chair. But you are an official, I don't know what processes need to be followed. I did not say flout the processes. And I think it's important to make the distinction because AG also mentioned it as part of his opening remarks to say administrators should be accountable for their process in terms of the Public Finance Management Act as required by the prescription and the legislation. So that's the challenge we have in this regard. There was an emergency that was identified. There was a need to act initially. So that is acknowledged by the Office of the AG. But that emergency was allocated 91 million, and to date, the current business plan now indicates a cost related to that same emergency of 13.6 billion. And the emergency was in 2014. We are now in 2017. It's also worth noting that there's a particular guidelines. I can't recall the piece of legislation. I think it's the National Disaster Management Act, which says if there's a disaster that's declared, that disaster only lasts for 3 months. Okay, I think Honorable Wasso knows that. So it only lasts for 3 months. And then after 3 months, then it needs to be regazetted again if you want to incur any additional expenditure related, or that's our layman's interpretation. So the challenge with regard to compliance, supply chain management, which has increased exponentially based on the same principle of emergency. And then further to that, like I mentioned, over and above supply chain management, honorable chair, honorable members, we also looked at contractual arrangements. Being construction in nature, in this expenditure, we also looked at the CIDB guidelines, and we realized that some of the contracts which were entered into did not conform with the CIDB principle, setting forth the timelines or the payments or termination dates, etc. Even the scope as well, because the scope kept changing exponentially. And last but not least, we mentioned the predetermined objectives. I think the predetermined objectives, the biggest issue here was the issue with the multi-year projects. So you only started taking them this year, but this project commenced 2 to 3 years ago. So how have they been accounted for? Who's been taking them? And again, honorable chairperson, honorable members, it's important to know that we are not saying that the department did not do the necessary required tracking, saying the evidence was not provided to us, and therefore we also can conclude that the APP and the budgeting principles also are not aligned because you're spending money, but yet you're not taking it in terms of your performance and reporting thereon. And then we also report where certain targets are partially achieved. Because if you have a project and you have a particular timeline you put to it, if you're exceeding that or you're not meeting those targets, then surely there must be some processes that are engaged into and to and understand why. Otherwise, we'll end up in a situation where the project, like AJ mentioned, instead of taking 7 months, they take 7 years. Then, Chairperson, I'm going to jump into the more context of the findings. Before I jump into the context of these findings, Chairperson, I'd like to take 2 minutes with your indulgence to say that the complaint was received from both the department and the water trading entity. So both entities submitted formal complaint letters. But over and above that, we also received complaint letters from the contractors who were engaged by the department or appointed by the department. Now, you'll see the format of the slide just talks mainly to the projects and not the WT issue, which includes the TCTA issue and also the issue of the software license which was purchased, which is not used. The reason why we haven't included those specifics there is because you will recall at the BRRR we spoke in depth around that, and the we focus more on the legal aspects of the complaint, which is in the projects, you know, the legal basis of the work that was done around the project. I think the TCTA issue, the contestation there is around the timing of the finding, but again, we've got evidence in our on our side that we engaged the department on this matter early enough, and we are dependent on an external parties, external party, which is then the auditor of the TCTA, and they were only successful in providing us with the supporting evidence which both ourselves and the department rely on to formulate the financial statements in the audit report. They only sent that evidence on the 31st of July. We actually went further by extending the audit sign-off date with 2 days to make sure that we afford the department the opportunity to see if we can't have an intervention just to deal with this matter, but unfortunately that intervention was not successful because it required a lot of journals and adjustments, which also then required assessment and evidence, which was then not done successfully. The license issue, I think that's quite straightforward from our point of view. There's a contract. We're paying a service provider for a software license, and we're not using that software license, so we deem that as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The department has noted that there might be a contractual clause which makes it not a fruitless and wasteful expenditure, but that will also be handled as part of the complaint process. But from where we are standing, based on the evidence at hand, as we are today, that is fruitless and wasteful expenditure based on the evidence that was provided at the time. Then the last issue on the WTE was also with regards to the project, but all 10 projects, 5 of them relate to water and sanitation and 5 to WTE, so at least that is will be dealt with as part of this process. So, Honourable Chairperson, on slide 26, I know I'm playing with my time now, Honourable Chairperson, I'll try and move it along before my boss kicks me under the table. Allocation of projects to appointed contractors. This is just a diagram just to illustrate which projects were allocated. And for purpose of the briefing, Honourable Chairperson, I'm not going to mention names because we also agreed with the contractors that in good faith we'll try and finalise the formal processes first, but we'll give you the context of the findings without delving into the specifics of those names. But that's just a diagram showing you which projects were allocated to which companies, but primarily the issues around Company A and Company C, and Company B, Company A, B, and C. So, contractual arrangements, Honourable Chairperson. When somebody normally appoints somebody as a turnkey contractor, you would expect the person would do project management, you would design, and then you would go and actually construct, which is the contracting part thereof. So Company A was engaged, but Company A actually noted to us during one of our engagements that they are just a consulting firm, therefore they went and appointed a subcontractor to do the actual construction. And the agreement that we asked for between the implementing agents, which is Lepelle Northern Water, and this company was not provided to us in time during the time of audit, so we could also not assess whether it allowed for that person to go and subcontract. So that's a bit of a challenge. The other contracts that we were provided were with the business plan. But the business plan, as you would agree, is not really a contract. It's a business plan. It just says how I intend on achieving the certain objectives and implementing this project. And that did not comply with what we deem as a suitable form of contracting as required by the CIDB. What's important to note in this regard, Chairperson, is it did not have clear commencement dates or time for completion or what needs to be done in terms of, you know, when there are delays, what is the recourse. And that's a problem because then you'll have sort of an open-ended contract in this regard while expenditure is happening. So the other thing that's worth noting is with regard to the contractual documentation is normally when you appoint a turnkey service provider, the steps would go as follows. Water and sanitation on slide 28, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members. The department would issue a directive, we would approve funding, and then between us and the implementing agent, we agree. The implementing agent would then request a deviation if there's a need. We just worked on it that there's a need, there's a deviation required. And then the implementing agent, which in this regard is Lepelle Northern Water, would then appoint the contractor. They agree with the contractor the scope, and they sign a service level agreement. And then if it allows, the contractor will then appoint the subcontractor. How it happened in this scenario, based on the evidence that was provided to us at that point in time of audit, was on the 15th of August, Lepelle Northern Water already agreed the scope with the company. And then Lepelle Northern Water requested for a deviation. The third step was then they already appointed the company by issuing them a letter of appointment. And then that's on the 20th. And then only on the 24th did they request funding or department approved the funding. Subsequent to that, a day later on the 25th, the minister issued the directive. So then we can't say the minister issued the directive and therefore say go and do something that is critical now, and then we started engaging in the process to say it's an emergency. I think that was quite critical for us. It stood out in terms of the sequence of events, saying it reinforces our assessment that it's irregular. And then ultimately, all the way to appointing the subcontractor. Then on the next slide, just again by way of illustration for the Tzenin Dam, particularly relating to the Tzenin Dam in this regard. This one was done slightly different. The department issued the directive, but then immediately after the department issued the directive, Lepele Northern Water requested for a deviation, and only after deviation was requested did we then define the scope. So we requested deviation, but then we don't know what we are requesting in terms of the scope. Then the scope was then defined. And then from there onwards did we issue RFQ. Now what's important in this regard is the RFQ was issued on the 12th of November, but it was closed the very next day in terms of receiving requests for quotation. And then finally, in terms of this slide, after Lepele Northern Water appointed the company and the SLA was signed, that company already issued us with an invoice. So the RFI closed, as you can see, by step number 5. And then it jumped to step number 6, where the next day or soon thereafter we received an invoice from the appointed company. Again, Honorable Chairperson, this is analysis we made based on the information which was available at that point in time when we signed off the audit. A further analysis we did, Honorable Chairperson, was with regard to the project management layers. Now, we appointed Lepele Northern Water. They're supposed to get a project management fee because they're the implementing agent. But then we have another private consulting firm which must then come and verify the work that was done to make sure that there are no risks and all the risks are addressed. But then we also, the consulting company, which is Company A, which was appointed as a turnkey service provider, also then charges project management fees. So if you add up all the project management fees, they add it up to 11%, where the industry norm is between 3 to 5% according to that legislation that we've, or the guidance that we've put on there. So the analysis that we did, and this is maybe a bit just to indicate the extent of the project management fees to the committee, is just an illustration. It is that if you take the total anticipated project budget of 13.6 billion over 5 years, and then you allocate how much each role player gets in terms of those percentages on an annual basis. So Lepele Northern Water, based on 5%, would get 136 million per year, and Company A would get 82, and private consulting firm also 82, based on those percentages. So meaning 5% of 13.6 billion, and then 3% respectively for the other ones on the 13.6 billion. And then you say each year, how much are they getting? If you take that amount and you divide it by a senior principal hourly rate as per the public works guidelines, you will see that it equates to about 88,000 hours that will be spent on project management per year by Lepele Northern Water or by Company A or by the private consulting firm. And if you look at about 160 average hours per month, it means that you need to have 46 full-time officials just doing project management, and the other ones 28. It's just the extent of the project management fees which are then charged on this. Now, again, when we engaged, this was based on the evidence that was available at the point of audit. The department could have certain other information where they come and say, but the extent of the project is this much, and therefore we needed the following resources, but we did not see evidence of the extent of those resources, justifying those resources on the ground when we did our audit work. The next step was to look at the time-based fees. So this is where the project manager or the person or the contractor who is involved in the audit, he goes, he executes his day-to-day activities, then he submits an invoice, and the contractor then submits the invoice to the department. If you look for the month of August 2014, an employer, or employee rather, charged 160 hours, which is hours for a full month, for project management on the Giani project, and then he charged the same resource again, 160 hours for engineering and supervision on the same project. So again, there are only 40 hours available, work hours available, unless the person then worked, you know, 20-hour work days, and that would then have to be recorded as overtime, and it wasn't recorded as such. It was 160 for this and 160 for that, therefore indicating duplicate invoicing which happened in this regard. And that not only happened in the month of August, but it also happened in September and in October. Now, in closing this slide, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, is that when we engage stakeholders, normally you would have a cost for stakeholder engagement. You sit in meetings, you make sure that your scope is right, your work is right, there's understanding and consensus, and you're taking all the key critical issues, knowledge sharing, whatever it might be. In this instance, especially in August, we had a full charge of 1.6 million for stakeholder engagement, but the company was only appointed on the 20th of August. And you have the same charge again for the full month in September and the full month in October. So if you at least accept September and October that there was stakeholder engagement, but how can you charge the full month again for August when you were only appointed on the 20th of August? And these are some of the discussions we're having with the department, saying that it's indicative of money that was paid for which value was not received. Then to conclude the time-based fee matters, we now look at the rates which were charged by some of the skills on the project. We benchmarked it because it was 2014, so you'll excuse that the guidance we got was, it says from 1 April 2014, because we had to see what you would have charged reasonably at that point in time when the expenditure occurred. So you'll see, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, that a senior official on level 13 would have charged about 1,469 according to the Public Service Administration guidance. And then from the public works side, for the technical side, a senior person would have charged 1,446, but Company A claimed up to 3,500 an hour for the skills which they used there. Now, Honorable Chairperson, Members, I'm going to be a little bit naughty here and say, as the Office of the AG, I also then went and did a bit of a benchmarking exercise, because we also use some of these skills in the same field, engineers and stuff. We recently used an engineer to assist us on some of the other water boards audit, and that person, being of a PhD background, he's a doctorate in engineering, only charged us the average, which was about 1,400, close to that rate. So the person needed to have been really doubly qualified to charge 3,500 an hour. So just by way of saying, we really benchmarked this as well in arriving at the conclusion. And the last part was with regard to the excessive construction costs. Now, when you sign your contract, you acknowledge as a service provider, you it's not your business if you're selling the person this bottle of water for 50 rand and they accept it. There's a legally binding contract. You must get your money. But, however, it doesn't take away from the fact that the person who was procuring the services was required to ensure that they get value for money and ensure we can do more with whatever we are allocated. So from this point of view, we then did a further benchmarking exercise to look at a project which went through open tender processes in the same area, the same region, also doing pipeline in the Mopani district. And that company, which is now referred to as Company D, charged an average of 435 rand a square meter or a meter, I don't know, let's call it a meter for installation of the pipes. Whereas on the pipelines that were done by Company B, the average cost amounted to about 1,447. Now again, I'm saying it's important that we know that we say we benchmark it against a firm in the same area, in the same pipelines. Not this one is building a dam, this one is building a pipeline. So you can't argue this project is implemented in Limpopo, this one is in Northern Cape, or rocky areas are different, or soil surfaces are different. So then it then begs the question, did we really get value for money? And it's worth noting that Company B processes are the ones that went through the emergency process, whereas Company D was appointed through the normal tender procurement process. So when we go out on tender, we actually, there is an element of value for money which is arrived at, and that's the conclusion we are arriving at based on that analysis. So, Honorable Chairperson, concluding comments and recommendations, I think these are more or less in line with what we discussed at the BRRR process, Honorable Chairperson, in the sense that we recommend that the department and officials go back and do a full assessment of the extent of the risks which have been highlighted here as part of this process. Again, this is work that we did as part of a value add. They may have certain information which they feel that they want to present, but at the time of audit, when we conducted our audit, this is the information or the conclusions which were reached based on the evidence at hand. And the fact that we only did 10 projects and the department implements a magnitude of projects, they have to really go back and ensure that they apply the principles and implement proper controls going forward, because it's in the core mandate to deliver these services, and they will always be contracting, so that we make sure that these principles are addressed, that we can address the risks as well. And then also a review of the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, because potentially more could be out there based on the work that we've done. We've only touched on high level of these contracts. Honorable Chairperson, I don't know if there's anything that AG wants to add or Ellis wants to add of my colleagues in this regard. As mentioned, Honorable Chairperson, the remaining pieces of the slide are just the individual projects which will give you feedback in terms of those four areas that we discussed. Chairperson, you remember these four areas were actually put on a slideshow last year, October, when we did the BRRR briefing, so we'll give you feedback on key projects on those areas, Honorable Chairperson. And these detailed findings, Honorable Chairperson, are really the basis of the factual contestation of the outcomes, because the work that was done here, saying you potentially overpaid, and because we've got evidence that you overpaid in certain areas, we therefore feel that it's fruitless and wasteful expenditure, that they are fighting or contesting the fruitless and wasteful expenditure and the irregular expenditure outcomes, but it's based on the work that was done here, if I can contextualize it like that.
Chair, if I may just wrap it up now. Thanks, Dr. Sfeto, for the feedback. Chair, just the last slide, which is slide number 35, just to illustrate the point and bring back where I started and where Andres covered the ground in terms of the detail. The long and short of it is that in this formula where we talk about monopoly plus discretion, lack accountability is what influences instances of corruption as far as C is concerned. It's exactly illustrated by the information that Andres has shared. Where you've got higher levels of discretion being applied in any environment, where you only have the monopoly of the delivery of that service. Let's get it. The one institution that is responsible for the management and the distribution of water is just Water Affairs and nobody else. You can't run away and go to someone else and say, let's do water. The statutory authority for doing that service is largely there. Hence, we say that in a monopoly environment where you've got people who are not able to seek other alternatives for the same service, and you've got higher levels of discretion with lower levels of accountability when you execute transactions, you can inadvertently create an environment that is susceptible to corrupt activity. And that's what is at the heart of what we are presenting in terms of this report. Back to you, Chair.
Hey, thank you very much, AG and your team. What I would propose you do, members, is for us to engage with the submission by the AG's office on questions that seek clarity, and thereafter we allow the department to comment and then take a fuller discussion after which. Are we fine with that? Okay. Only questions that seek clarity. And perhaps if we make any comments, maybe if we resist on comments until the department comes, then we come with the entire engagement on our part. Are there areas where we seek clarity? Thank you. Mr. Chauvin? Noted, Mr. Person and Mr. Mguni.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. I think some of us have spent more time on public accounts, Chair, very much involved in the ISCOPA-related work for many years. I fully sort of agree with the presentation as presented, generally. The point that I want to find out, Chair, will be with this standoff, therefore, AG, where are we with the department on the issues that they've raised with yourself? Now you have made this presentation in their engagement with yourself. I don't want even to touch on to this document. Where are we with regard to this standoff? I think it's important so that we are able to locate it in a proper the space, our discussion, by the way, moving forward. But, you know, AG and the powers, therefore, obvious, you are guided by PFMA to the latter. And you identify fruitless and wasteful expenditure. In your engagement with the department, other than the standoff generally, there will be what they call audit audit plan where you sort of implement some of the findings that the AG has raised. Do we have that in place, agreed upon with the department? But other than that, I want to understand that before you sign off your report, you will then take both the accounting authority and the executive authority on board on the issues and the final report. Was that process done between yourself and the executive authority? I mean that the executive, I mean the minister, and the accounting authority, I mean the director general of the department. Because for me, these are very critical areas, because before you finalize whatever that you finalize as your annual report, AG, you'll have, satisfy yourself with having consulted with all stakeholders. As it is happening with us in the committee here, we have interacted with yourself and we're satisfied of the engagement. We have raised a number of concerns and all of that. So for now, these are my, your normal consultation processes that then happen. Then we'll then maybe come back to the core of the issues as they are raised by the AG. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Bazan?
Chairperson, thank you. AG, in your opinion, and I want to rely on your opinion, how do we change around the problems within water and sanitation? With the instability of personnel with ADGs or ADGs in 8 years, just your opinion for the committee, how do we get this department back on track?
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Morning, ladies and gentlemen and colleagues. I want to acknowledge the report by the AG, and thanks for bringing those issues to our attention. I wanted just to check. Before verimentation, I think it's verimentation, the shifting of funds from this plan target to another target or whatever, another project. My understanding is that there should be this 5C protocol, which will be consultation, communication, collision, and then do things out of context, blah, 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 and also capacity. Because APP, the annual performance plan, is given to us, to Parliament, for us to approve. And we expect the department to perform according to that, to the APP. When there's this change of targets, or what are the change of shifting of funds, in one of your presentation, I think it was 2014, if not 2015, you indicated to us that before anything that can be done in the APP, there should be consultation to Parliament and to you or Treasury. Did the department do that when they were shifting funds, where you consulted? To us, I don't remember, to the department, to us as portfolio committee, I don't remember being consulted that there should be this thing. You remember now you said there was, in one of your reports, you said there was 140 million that was budgeted, but something like 940 million, something like that. But it ended up being used. And which were not consulted on that one. Were you consulted on that issue? On engagement with the department, you indicated that one of their fruitless expenditure was to spend on project that was not budgeted. When you were sitting down with the department, what were the reasons? The reasons of spending on unbudgeted a project? When we speak with the whip, sometimes say, hey, when you go to the shop, you must go to the shop full, not hungry, because when you look at your budget, you will end up finding that a lot of things that you have bought are sweets that have made you, that won't even take you for a month, because they don't budget for those things. the department has complained. There was this indication to us that no, we are challenging the auditor general's report based on the fruitless expenditure. And we have stated it very clear here and now. We are saying, you know, if the department pushes work to the implementing agent, the relevant supply chain management activities or management itself must be complied with. If the implementing agent does not, that comes back to boil back to the department. So there's no way of shifting the blame or saying, it wasn't us, it was TCTA and so forth. They will say, no, it's you because you're part of this. What are the chances of the department succeeding on their complaint of the fruitless expenditure and the items that you have indicated are under that, so that they cannot even come to us if you can say, we are still challenging. We must tell them right here and right now that you are not even able to going to succeed in whatever you're saying in here. Take into consideration what you have said, that people must come in here and provide evidence, additional evidence, if they say they did not perform such, or they have what proper evidence of such transactions. Thank you very much, sir.
Ma'am Kaula.
Ngibonge Sihlalo. Ngibonge isethulo lapho ngaphambili kubacwaningi bamabhuku. Nakho ngifuna ukukubuza, and ngiyajabula uma ngilalela niyakhombisa ukuthi ninayo intshisekelo yokubona izimali zabakhokhi bentela zenza into efanele. Nakho-ke umbuzo wami, nakho-ke seniyibonile le mali ukuthi ayiyanga lapho ebekade iplanelwe ukuthi iye khona iyosebenza ukuze abantu bathole izinto zabo. Ngifuna ukwazi ukuthi nenze njani, ngabe ninawo yini amandla okuyibuyisa, noma lapho enibika, noma ikhona nendawo lapho enikwazi ukobika khona beyilandele. Ma ngabe sibuyile, yini eniyenzayo kulo muntu onesandla sokudukisa izimali zabakhokhi bentela? Ngabe niyambopha or niyamxosha, noma niyamthatha nimbalekisa ayocasha komunye umnyango niyeke kanjalo? Or mhlambe-ke ngabe yikho ni lokhu okugcina kulo mnyango esikuwona, njengoba ngikhala ngokuthi from 2014 kuyashintshashintsha, ufike ubone lo DG akasekho, sekubona omunye kuthi uya-act, usathi nami uya-acta, akasasekho. Lilonke ikuphi eningasi tshela ngakho ngalo mnyango enikutholile, noma okungahambi kahle ngokwenu? Ngiqonda ukuchaza ukuthi nina-ke ngempela uma ngabe nibhekisisa, ngoba ningabacwaningi bamabhuku, nizibona lezi zimali zisebenza ngendlela efanele endaweni engafanele, noma ziyaganga? Okokugcina, ade siku-oversight eLimpopo, lama ngithi ngiyabheka, lezi ndawo ziyabalwa. Kunezinkinga eziningi esizitholile laphaya, ekhombisa ngokuthi izimali eziningi ebeziyisela ukuthi zosebenza khona azisebenzanga khona. Noma ezinye nje, njengoba ngichaza la sikhala nanokuthi kunomabhohol othola ukuthi nqwabi ifakiwe, ifakelwe abantu, iningi layo ayisebenzi. Ezinye iy'ndawo abantu abaholelwe, uyayibona loo nto enjalo. Ngoba uyabo, mina ngokwami nje lo mnyango angifuni ukuqamba amanga. Asiuboni thina usilapha, futhi awusiboni usisiza, futhi asiuboni unalo le iqhaza ulibambile kubantu bakithi. Okunye uzobe seqedela, ngoba ngisuke ngenzela nje ukuthi ngidlalele ihloko bese eqedela number 2 sesebhalile. Ngiyabonga.
I'll refer to the record that the honorable member combined before.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks to the Auditor General. Let's suppose the money has been redirected to other programs. What do you do as auditors? Are you allowed to redirect it back where it was supposed to be, or whether you report somewhere about this matter? If it has been redirected back where it was supposed to be, what happens to the culprit that has been redirecting the money here and there, because this money belongs to the taxpayers? Do you arrest the person? Do you fire the person? Or do you transfer him or her to the other departments? What is it that you can tell us about the department? What are the tangible findings that you have with you, especially things that have had a negative impact in all the processes of the department? And lastly, we've been to Limpopo for oversight. I'm happy because we were able to detect a lot of problems in Limpopo. We could realize that there is mismanagement of monies there, and unfortunately we ran out of time as we were supposed to come back to Parliament, and we were unable to deal with some of the issues. And this department gives us no hope. Thank you.
Okay. Ma'am Kikan.
Thank you, Chairperson. Colleagues, thanks for presentation, AG and Chair. My concern is how do we turn the situation around in the depth of water and sanitation? Thanks.
Mamu Mahabani.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, I would like to get clarity on the issue of the Giani project and the Mopani project, the difference. Because according to my understanding, those projects are in Giani, and Giani falls under Mopani district. And Giani is not a water service authority municipality, but Mopani is the one. So I just want to get clarity on that one. Secondly, is the issue of the picking up of project. I just want to understand from AGSA as to when you go out to pick out the project, are you concentrating on the bad project, or you take both for the department or the entity to realize their weaknesses and whatever? The other issue is, I just want to check if sometimes AGSA did find themselves sitting together with the National Treasurer. Since National Treasurer are in control of the funds of all the departments, in order to advise after having the quarterly reports, having the outcome of that particular project of that particular department, do you sometimes sit together in order to advise them for them before the violence or the giving out of money on top of the one that they were having, that you have realized that they have been used in a correct way, to advise National Treasury not to give them another money, since we have realized this type of a thing, like the department failing to use the money properly, or not using the correct channels. The issue of escalation of fund. You did mention that when the project started, or the intervention in Giani, it was around 91 million. Then later it expanded to 248 million. And now it's sitting at 13.6 billion. Were you advising the department or advising Treasurer? Because I think you were following everything there. And since their plan was at 91, why didn't you come up with a mechanism to stop the department or treasurer in giving up a lump sum in a project which you see that it's no longer targeting the thing that they said they are targeting to? Because if it was an intervention, and you did mention the issue of 3 months, you said if it's intervention, it may continue for 3 months, and now it's a multi-year project. Thanks.
Okay. Maybe just two quick ones from where I am seated. The implications of the standoff between the department and the AG's office. Well, what are the implications? And secondly, you did not touch on an issue that is quite pertinent. The department that it is also dealing with, that of a debt collector. Today we have what WTE had to go through as part of its own overdraft, which impacts negatively on its own finances. It is in anticipation of such collections, and that you don't have such collections. Therefore, you have a debt collector appointed at 11.5%. This year, you're talking about a figure of no less than 8 billion rand appointed to one debt collector. As to what progress thereof, those are the details I would imagine the department might wish to come up with. But from where you are seated as the Office of the Auditor General, if you can comment on that. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I know that the team is going to specifically focus on some of the issues of the detail. Let me maybe just pick up a few cross-cutting questions that were raised by the members, one of which was how do we change around the audit fortunes of water portfolio, in my opinion. And I think in answering that question, I'll probably cover other questions that were raised subsequently, which are in that realm. And then I think the team will help with the specific detailed questions that were asked. Let me start with the overall one. When I look at Open Affairs Chair, Water Affairs and Sanitation from the estimates of national expenditure document side of things, and you look at the different programs that are set out for funding some of the obligations that come with Water Affairs and Sanitation, it is clear that there is a starting point from that planning document which suggests that there's going to be a reliance and dependency on others for this department to meet its obligations. Because it doesn't start with saying we are now recruiting engineers and all the hydrologists that are needed to be doing the work that we do. So that's the starting point for me. You know, even before you start, that you are going to rely on other people who have got the technical expertise required either to repair, install, and refurbish various systems of infrastructure across the water distribution network in the country. To me, that's a starting point. But secondly, we also know that in the ongoing day-to-day maintenance of some of this infrastructure, there are certain things that are going to be ignored until they break down, which will result in us having to call for services for someone to come and fix it for us. Now, if I look at that, Chair, and you look at the amounts involved, there's absolutely no way that the department could be expected to recruit to the last person in order to do this thing themselves. So for me, when I look at it in that context, I'm saying, is the department sufficiently positioned as a department in terms of its own internal resources? Because it's now trading with third parties
with many other layers of invisible service providers behind the ones in the front who might be benefiting for various reasons or services rendered or not from the contractual amount that is being paid to the primary service providers. And the question I'm asking myself is the department in a position to itself with its own internal people, I guess those that are managed not just as distributors of budgets but also as monitors of whether what is intended to be achieved is intended. Is that capacity in place? Because by the time it comes to the audit, by the time it comes to Parliament, what matters is, have you got the people inside who are going to put preventative controls to make sure that there's no overreach, there's no overextension of commitments that the department has willingly gone into? Because let's face it, some people who have got businesses, whether it's engineering or not, and other services, they are normally also driven by growth considerations. They want to grow. And when they grow, they want to grow market share. And the repetitiveness of their services becomes attractive to their success. But the quality of that deliverable may not be as good in the hands of the department, which means it must go back 3 months later to buy a similar service from a similar service provider for much more than what it was meant to in the first place. Let's be fair, I think some of these things could be coming from there. But what compounds it is the fact that while somebody was standing guard between the bank account and the delivery of that particular service, before you know it, they are out of the system for various reasons. Someone else comes and prioritizes other things that may probably not be as itchy as what led to the one that was tossed before. And then suddenly focusing on various other things other than what needs to be controlled. And I can see that there are elements of that, in essence, if you look at it, which are growing over time. Let's think about it also in a different sector. The kind of financial difficulties that are there in the aviation industry for the assets that are owned by the state are not difficulties that accumulated in a 12-month period. They accumulated over a number of years, and because of them not being fully and closely monitored by those that are inside that particular institution, they come up after year number 10 as now the need for significant fiscal injections, because all that was an indicator over the years building up to year number 10 was not fully attended to or given attention. Now, Chair, the point is, that's the big gap, especially in an environment where the accountability is not very strong. It is a huge gap, because most of the time you discover these things, and they are complex. If someone is to come and refurbish a big dam, and it's going to cost millions, it's very difficult if there's nobody who's going to double-check that and make sure that it's done according to what needed to be done. Because if I was a professional engineer in that context, why must I go look for more work when there are no hanging fruit here and there's nobody watching? Some people justify and rationalize it and say, well, this is just the opportunity of leveraging business opportunity. Listen to that word, opportunity of leveraging business opportunity in order to grow market share. Sounds all nice, because there's nothing there that must be suspect. So I think that's what, to me, is at the heart of it. Is there sufficient monitoring activity within the environment where these budgets are being expended to give assurance that the level best is done? Because the issue of contesting the audit will take a life of its own. Over time, if you are able to produce the corroborative alternative evidence, the auditors may be persuaded, depending on what you produce to them. But then, if you don't produce anything to prove the fact that our findings are not firm, then unfortunately, we write with a green pen. And we are the only ones who can write with a green pen, unfortunately, without being arrogant. But the point is, we're not going to change the color of the pen, effectively. So, Chair, having said that, I think the department, from a number of questions that are asked, there are many that are about the department speaking for itself as well in the context of this conversation, so that we don't discover 10 minutes before we are finished that we didn't allow them the chance to say for themselves, because it's going to be difficult for me to also say what is going to happen to these contestations, because we didn't raise them. All we raised is findings. So we are standing on this side of the road waiting for something to persuade us away from these findings. Otherwise, we are still stuck there.
On that very note, we shall only allow this one round of engagement with the office of the AG and allow the department to come through, and then we have one comprehensive set of discussion, looking at time as well, which is the point raised by the AG. Mr. Choko, very quick one.
Thank you very much. I'm sorry that they not meant to undermine your decision. What is very important, AG, is the point that I raised, that before you sign off the audit, the process that then gets followed, before that, this consultation that then takes place, I thought you would then speak to that consultation process, because we want to understand where does this standoff arises from. But secondly, when the department comes in chair, what will be very important is Section 40 of PFMA. If you have not complied with that Section 40 before the Auditor General moves into the audit, then there's something else that they must tell us. Because Section 40 tells you the responsibility of the accounting officer, what he must do to prepare record keeping and all, so that when the AG moves into that space, the AG does not have to go and want documents around. And if someone has failed in that path, there's no one that can then want to push back the audit of the Auditor General. Because that part instead dictates to what the accounting officer must do. And I think that when the department speaks, they'll have to start from that point. So that day, consultation process for me is very important.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Just a quick one on the consultation process, Chair. Just in terms of the rules, the year end for departments and entities is March. They get 60 days, according to the PFMA, to submit their financial statements by the 31st of May. The auditors, once they receive the financial statements, which are a representation by management, I think let's underline this, the submission of financial statements by management to the auditors is not just a paper flow exercise. It has its roots in the PFMA. The PFMA says within 60 days of having prepared yourself for submission to the auditors, you shall hand over a set of financial statements which is a representation of the representations made by management on the accounts for the last 12 months. So that's the second part of the process. So we receive them from 1 June onwards, the day after we receive them. We have also 60 days within which to sign an audit report setting out our findings and conclusions on those financial statements that were given to us 60 days ago. That's what the law says. That's what we audit to. When we reach a point, because the audit is going to be an interface between many individuals, both in finance and project management, in supply chain, in human resource, in information technology, in every other area of the department, depending on the issues that you are testing through the financial statements that you are given as the story of management. Story of management at the end of May. We attest to that story. Because that story is not our story, management must sign up for acknowledgement of ownership of that story. That's what happens. Management must say, we are the owners and possessors of everything said in these financial statements. Then we come up and say, having looked at the story of management, there are some areas that we do not feel comfortable with in the light of the representations that management makes. Here are the findings to illustrate such. Management, do you have issues with this? If you do, you also have a right to hold your signature and not sign it if you feel that we are being unfair to you based on our independent assessment. When management has signed that these financial statements which belong to us are now being handed over to auditors and the auditors deal with those issues, you can already see at times that management is not completely happy. I was once in a similar situation myself where I was told that the status of my accounting records when I worked in another institution in the private sector, I was not happy.
But I didn't use the excuse that some of the errors in the accounting records come back from records of 1967. I had to bite the bullet and deal with whatever it is that was in the books at the time. That's what the responsibility of management is. That's what people who assume those responsibilities as accounting officers sign up for. It doesn't matter whether the history precedes your time. Once you're there, you then have full responsibility for those records. So, Chair, in terms of the process, we do create that space even through a forum that takes place during the audit, which is about the accounting officer presiding over what we call the audit steering committee, which is a forum that is created to iron out differences between management and the auditors, because there will always be those differences, either of interpretation or where certain documents were not found and management says, no, 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 you spoke to the wrong person, we do have that document, we may have kept it away from others for various reasons type of stuff. That's what that forum is about. It's about also saying, look, if you are disagreeing with our findings, do you have the appetite to go test what we are putting on the table so that we can get an independent person to provide something fresh away from those that were too involved in the detail? You can do that. You can also have a difference of opinion between the team members themselves. The team members could look at each other in the face and say, hang on, it looks like you have gone beyond the normal in interpreting this finding. How about this and so on and so forth? Or the client could submit an independent request for a difference of opinion so that we can together find an independent party who can mediate on the interpretation of that particular opinion. Those are the opportunities that are there in the audit process. But if you've signed and we've signed, then the issues of contestation become history. Because now you are trying to subvert an audit process if you are trying to contest these issues after the event. And that's the issue.
You want to respond to any of the questions, clarifications?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think Honorable Chair, AG has touched largely on some of the overarching questions. There was just one specific question that Honorable Chairperson had asked with regard to the debt collector. Now, Honorable Chairperson, that wasn't covered as part of our scope because the scope was really to cover in brief around the issue of the contestations or the pushback, so we didn't cover that in terms of our presentation. AG has spoken with regard to the process. Maybe worthwhile to mention as well, and without sounding like I'm rubbing salt into the wound, is the steering committee process. Normally when that also is done, Honorable Chair, what we do is, over and above it, as audit team, we'll sit down and say, what are the real significant key issues which are pertinent? You don't want to come at the end of the audit and then you give the accounting officer a draft report. Then they say, but I never knew about this qualification, I never knew about this matter. So we write a formal letter after the steering committee meeting process whereby we submit that letter to the accounting officer as well to say, you know, these are the key issues in your environment that could potentially adversely impact on your audit outcomes. And that process we normally start engaging in already as early as the end of June in anticipation of finalizing our audit processes by 31 July. And therefore, as the AG has mentioned, by the time we sign, then we feel that we've engaged in sufficient engagement in that regard. And then there was a specific issue with regard to the Giani and the Mopani district. We understand that Giani forms part of the Mopani district municipality. What we've looked at, Honorable Makhabane, is not institution or entity. We looked at a particular project. So the project is, that's what the department names it. It's the Giani project, or it's in Giani, or the Mopani project. We know initially when this decision was taken, it was supposed to be implemented by the Mopani district, but due to some challenges, it was then taken away and it was implemented by an implementing agent. But just the distinction that we are referring to the individual project and the location of that project. And then with regard to how we picked our project, without sounding too onerous in terms of this one, is before we start the audit and engage in the audit process, we have to understand and evaluate your environment. So you have to say what is the risk that could, you know, if something goes wrong in this environment, could potentially result in something material being reported. In our environment, being the water environment, is the infrastructure assets. That's where the bulk of our money goes to affect service delivery. So already from a start of point, you know your risk lies within the infrastructure assets and the projects which have been implemented, because you spend a lot of money in that regard. So we do an entire comprehensive risk assessment whereby we identify the project, but over and above that, you also look at the prior year history as well from the previous year. What is your audit evidence produced in the previous financial year? So you would recall that in 2014, 15 or 15, 16, we already reported these transactions as irregular expenditure. Therefore, it triggers a risk that now that you've got problems with regard to compliance and supply chain management, let's maybe now go and look at whether there's value for money on the ground related to these projects. So that's triggered by that set of comprehensive assessment. But it is, we do also apply a fair process where we statistically sample haphazardly. So it's not just that we focus on all the bad ones, because some of the contracts you see or the project that is green, when it's green, it's green, we just continue. But the audit process is geared in such a way that it must address risk. And therefore, if there's risk associated, you will always then pick that project. And unfortunately, those are the projects where normally things are not going too well. And then there was another question with regard to the audit plan. Honorable Chauke asked a follow-up question with regard to the audit plan. Honorable Chauke, yes, there is a document that we submit to officials of the department before we commence with our audit. It's called our audit strategy document. In that document, we highlight key deliverables, key milestones, key timelines, and key risks are also contained in that document. What we then do is also engage regularly with the department, and we'll tell them upfront, this is where we're going to focus our attention on. And we had such an engagement, especially on these projects, already last year in October, after we left the portfolio committee that we held at that hotel there, to sensitize the department to say, if you look at the way our methodology is evolving, the way the risk of the department has also evolved, we will then be focusing on the following key projects. And already at that stage, there was unhappiness. Now, with regard to the minister, the AG will kick me if I'm speaking out of turn, but we have been unsuccessful in securing a meeting with the minister since last year, September. But what we've done as the Office of the AG is, during regular intervals, we've sent correspondence with the key issues as well to the minister. Now, to answer the question specifically that Honorable Chauke asked with regard to engaging the minister before we sign the report, normally we try and do that, but that's more a courtesy because, strictly speaking, the PFMA allocates those responsibilities to the accounting officer. That's our primary contact person. But after we signed the audit report, immediately, within I think about a week or 2 weeks, we then submitted the outcomes with a letter to the minister upon, obviously, again, not being successful in securing a meeting, but we did inform the minister with regard to the outcomes at that stage, even if it was via correspondence. I think those are the more detailed questions that I remember, unless my colleagues want to, if I've missed something.
Honourable Chair, just a last comment around our role, and AJ has alluded to this, but I want to emphasise this, because there was a question whether we are stepping in early when we detect these. I think it's important to note that we come in fast the effect and we look backwards. And that's why it's so important that the department strengthen their internal control environment, because they need to be able to detect it and act long before the AG comes in and detects it. And that's why it's so important that going back to that accountability cycle, that the department starts with every finding that we have to go back to that cycle and say, where did it fail? Did it fail in planning? Did it fail in the do? Did it fail in the check? Or did it fail in when we had to act to correct the activities? So it's important that we make sure that the department now focus on where did it go wrong. There was also a question to say, what's the impact of the delay in the consultation? I think the biggest impact that we've seen is that there's a delay in the corrective action plan, because there's this waiting for us to deal with the contestation. And that's something that needs to be expedited. They need to do the corrective action plan. They need to go back to the projects and investigate these matters so that the department is in a position to, at least next year, give a set of financials that are accurately reflecting the irregular expenditure and the fruitless wasteful. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Okay, you're done? You covered? Without waste of time, let's allow the department to come in, Mr. Acting DG. Mr. Mahlangu.
As they do that, Chair, I think we need to note the fact that the executive authority did not have a side of the engagement with the Auditor General. I think it must be noted.
Mr. Musa?
Honourable Chairperson and members, maybe I should start with a statement so that there's no misunderstanding. Mr. McQuaid and I, or he probably knows.
So that there's no what?
Mr. McQuaid, so there's no misunderstanding my stance on issues. Mr. McQuaid probably knows that I spent 10 years doing the same type of job that he does, but as a public service commissioner.
The Auditor General.
And we would have agreements that we would sign with the Auditor General's office on certain issues that they would have to do, and that we would do ourselves, and whilst auditing departments in our particular spheres of government. So when I was informed by Barbara that the two CFOs had signed the documents for the financial documents, I asked her whether she had submitted that to the Auditor General. She said yes, and therefore the printing of the annual report was done. So I want to put that clearly on the record. There's no misunderstanding that, like, we're a truant department that did not want to have the annual report presented. We signed, and it was presented to Parliament. That's in contrast to those other departments that may be contesting the issues that are being contested. That did not mean, obviously, that because we were honorable and saying the report must be done, it must be given on time, it's already late, it did not mean that the issues that we're raising as concerns were not issues of concern. They were, and they are. And they are matters of serious concern, and they do require that we've written to Auditor General, so that we have a discussion on this matter, because if we don't have that discussion, we're going to have problems. Let me give one example, Chairperson, that honorable members do not know that is a problem. Let's take the Mopani issue as an example, as was raised.
Chairperson, I think you're going to flood this process very bad. Very bad, in a sense that you can't have the accounting officer speaking to Parliament without records. You can't have that. The accounting officer of the department must place before the Committee of Parliament a record of engagement. Now, the accounting officer is speaking out of his experience, and you're not talking to Parliament. That's not how Parliament is addressed. You table a document, and so that we have a record of what you have said in Parliament. Currently, there's no record. If it does not have a record, Chair, I don't want to entertain any discussion of your faith. You need a record signed off by the accounting officer, tabled in Parliament, before the Committee of Parliament, and then says, these are our issues. That's why they're here.
Thank you. Chairperson, please. Chairperson, you would recall that we were not invited to this meeting.
My take... Members of the exercise that we are engaging here now, that we have the Auditor General that is invited to come before us. We have received such a submission. We had impressed upon the department to come and join us and respond to the issues that shall have been raised by the AG's office, and issues in our interaction with the AG, so that they are readily here without having to ask them to come from wherever they are. So that's the understanding. They did attempt to smuggle a document
which is rejected with the contempt it deserves, precisely because that's not how things are done. Such documents have to be tabled officially. In fact, I was even asking Madia here as to who was circulating that document. Because we want to do things right. We don't want in future to have such similar experiences where any document can just circulate or be circulated. At the end of the day, when you do that circulation, it is Parliament that takes ownership of that document. And anyone who picks up on that document will certainly make reference to a document that was distributed in a committee of Parliament dealing with water and sanitation. So that we don't want that to happen. Let's allow Mr. Chauke this exercise, but equally, if you can, Mr. Mahlangu, be direct to the issues raised. It's important for you to have that history and that experience on your own. It's good for yourself. But what we are more keen on here is for us to be able to respond to the specific issues that have been raised, for us to be able to pursue a fuller engagement on the issues raised by the AG's office, responded to by yourselves. Mr. Basson?
Jefferson, I want to differ in the sense that it's no need to give us examples of problems. That examples we must give to the AG. The AG then, if there is a problem, will come back to us and say, we've made a mistake, we accept what they are saying. But for the department now to come and explain problems that they have with the AG, that's a communication between them and the AG. Eventually we get one document, and that's the document of the AG. So you know, I really don't see us discussing the matter. It's correct, they were not invited. We invited the year, but we invited the AG to come and explain because we had problems, and there was allegations made in the previous meeting that, you know, the AG didn't consult. Now we've heard that they even tried to consult with the minister, and they were not successful consulting with the minister. So, Chair, I really think it's a waste of time. They're not prepared. It don't help them telling us a story. It's not in writing, and they must sort it out with the AG. And that's my submission, Chairperson, that we just let the department go.
Mr. Kalo?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm not sure, Honorable Chair, as to what is it that we want to achieve by allowing this kind of an engagement. As far as the department is concerned, The reason why I'm saying that, Honorable Chair, is because the presentation by the Auditor General is not differing from the presentation we received yesterday from your SIU. There is no difference. And yesterday we even suggested that we need to engage the Office of the President to get some correspondence or reports in that regard. It is clear, Honorable Chair, and it doesn't need a rocket kind of a scientist to establish that the department has been converted into a money-making scheme by certain individuals. I'm worried, Honorable Chair, because we are about to close the term now, heading for 2019. Since we have been here engaging the Department of Water and Sanitation, receiving reports from the Auditor General, one and the same story. When are we going to arrest the situation as a portfolio committee? Perhaps we need to check as to whether we can't allow the Section 9 institutions to bite a little bit, Honorable Chair, because we cannot allow a situation where Section 9 institutions are being undermined by the government departments. Because as a portfolio committee, we are pinning our hope and trust on these institutions. Therefore, we are going to protect them, because even the public outside there, is having a trust in these institutions. So I was saying, Chair, in the interest of time, I don't think we must allow a situation where the department is going to respond to what the AG has presented here. Perhaps they must find a platform where they can engage on these matters. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Okay. Mamu Makhabani, you still want to make an issue or point, rather?
Thanks, Chairperson. I'm not going to make an issue, but it's like I'm lost. My thinking was that when Honorable Chauke wanted to pursue or to know why the department is here, we're going to get clarity on that, then we proceed. Because what I wanted to know now is, did the committee invite the department to come before us today or not? If not, then we have to take it from there to understand if the department are the ones who decided to come. Then I think we'll take it further to know that who is going to pay for that fruitless expenditure that they did today. But if it's the committee, I think even the committee need to account for, unless if I didn't get it clearly. Because if they are invited, really, it means we need to give them an ear. As much as some of us might be knowing their answers before they give it to us, but we must give them a hearing if really they are invited. But if they are not invited, it means we have to excuse them. Again, if the answers that we got yesterday from SIU, it's like the ones that we are getting from AGSA, why did we invite the AGSA today to come before us than to stick to the decision that we made yesterday, if there is any agreement that we agreed upon yesterday?
It's like we don't know what we want. Or else we're calling this department and the AGSA. Meanwhile, we do have our own answers. Why can't we take the clear decision and do what we think is best for us and also for the communities? Because we're not doing it for us. We are here to represent the communities. Thanks.
Thanks. Maybe just as we are raising our hands, still, for the record, the department has been invited to be with us. And the sole purpose, it is for them to respond so that when we proceed with this process of the PRR report, the intention it is for us to be better informed and empowered as we are to pursue this PRR report. So that's the only reason why they've been invited here. Without necessarily having to prepare themselves, they have presented themselves with their annual report. They were here yesterday, and for them it was more about getting to hear more of what shall have been presented by either the SIU or the Auditor General's office or other institutions. Next week, we still are pursuing your economist, National Planning Commission people to come. And again, they are there, they are to be invited, and for them it is to listen and make comment on what these other economists shall have to say about water and sanitation, the budget, the economic implications. So they are an important stakeholder in that context. And perhaps what I would, Mr. Mguni, I was simply just responding to that specific question, whether or not they've been invited.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Hello. I was wondering when we say now we're stopping this, the department from responding. You will remember that even yesterday we said when we were meeting the SIU, where are the other officials of the department? We asked them. And I understood it in the context of when we are talking with another stakeholder about another stakeholder, the main stakeholder we're talking about should be present so they can hear for themselves what the other stakeholder, more especially the Asian in this reference. But above all, in this exercise, Chairperson, the AGs indicated in their responses that, oh, these items are not for us to respond. The department may respond. Hence, you said, department respond. So I don't know why now we have to stop. They must, unless they are not responding on the items raised here. If they come with other items, you can stop them, really. But if there are items that are raised here, and then they have to respond, I will request that we allow them to respond on those items. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chago, you being the last.
No, Chairman, look, the issue of stakeholder, we don't have a stakeholder called a department. It's not our stakeholder. We're doing oversight over the Department of Water and Sanitation. The Department of Water and Sanitation is accountable to Parliament via the Portfolio Committee of Water and Sanitation. Members of Parliament were elected by the people outside there. We report our work to Parliament under the guide of the Speaker of Parliament that oversees the work of the committees of Parliament. Now, for purpose of engagement, Chairperson, is that one is that you need to place a record before Parliament, a record that forms part of the record of engagement at the level of the department, because you're not dealing with a person, you're dealing with a department that has capacity to respond on issues that are going to come. They are not observers, correctly, Chair, when they're in this meeting. They're meant to respond and respond appropriately. Now, the standoff emanates from the annual report, Chair.
the annual report that the AG together with the department have already signed off. And that report then gets tabled into Parliament. And when it's tabled into Parliament, it then gets referred to the Portfolio Committee of Parliament to process that report. And this is what we are now doing, Chair. Now, in processing of that report, we then said that there's a need that we have picked up. There's a standoff between the Auditor General and the Department with a clear understanding of that the process of standoff does not arise once the report is signed off. It does not. The report is signed off. It does not. Unless the Department will place in detail the issues that they are not in agreement with the Auditor General and what has been noted between themselves and the Auditor General before the report was tabled to Parliament. Now we're dealing with something that they forgone. The report is signed off, it's here before the committee. We wanted to understand what are the issues. Hence our question to the Auditor General today was the consultation process. The dispute of performance. Audit performance, for example, if you had to deal with program 3 of the department that has performed 28% and the department says, no, it's 38%, it does not arise. The Auditor General has already made a finding. Program 3 spends 12 billion rand on 28% performance. Where is the rest of the money? What happened to the rest of the billions that have disappeared? This is what the department is supposed to have been accounted for. Now, Chair, we are not going to put the Auditor General in the spotlight. I want to take it from the point that you raised earlier, Chair, that we have to defend at all costs institution of democracy in this country. We'll have to do that. And there's no one going to undermine the work of the Auditor General. It must be noted, I think, Chair, that as Parliament, because, you know, in my response, in my first comment, Chair, because I understand oversight to the latter, I said what the AG has presented is a fair presentation of what the Auditor General does. Now, we give the department an opportunity to speak, to respond on the issues. Then the acting Director General starts a process of how much he knows the department and departments, how much him and Mr. Makwetu have been working together. We don't need that story. It's not our story.
Okay.
What you needed, Chair, was that precisely these are the issues that were differing with the Auditor General. And we told you there. This whole story, you don't need that. These are the issues that we are saying to the AG and the department, we don't agree. But, you know, the report is going to be adopted. We have already made our own recommendation. In fact, after this meeting, we are going to be sitting on the report, our report now, to make recommendations to Parliament. And once Parliament has adopted our recommendations, they're implicable. We have to comply with them. And that's what we have done, our assessment. We have listened to the department. We have listened to the AG. We have listened to the Special Investigating Unit yesterday. And we made the resolution, Chair, again, that we'll have to call the NPA to come and appear because NPA is not doing anything. What the DG is, what the Auditor General is raising, in fact, in the report, if you look at that last slide, is the levels of corruption and mismanagement of public money. This is what that slide says. And we cannot be diverted, lose the focus, and then begin to deal with issues of nursing the feeling. Who signs off the final report, the accounting office? And who is now in the hell? It's no longer the person that signs off the watch call. If I may be correct, Chair. We now have another acting a accounting office on top of another 18 accounting office. These abnormalities. And it cannot be, Chair, that we as this committee of Parliament, I mean, for the fact that the party that I come from, we're trying to fight as much as possible the levels of corruption and mismanagement. And every day we are at A. Because we are let off, if we are to listen to the Special Investigating Unit yesterday, it's shocking, in fact, what's happened in this department. It's shocking, the levels of corruption and mismanagement. And there's no action that has been taken. And we can't sit back and say, you know, from the ANC, we are happy, this department is performing, we love you. It can't be.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chalke, on that one. I think the issues are very straightforward. We have now, at the time being 20 to 1. We must still go through this report itself. I would have thought that by now we should have been almost halfway through the report itself. Mama, you are insisting, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Can you be not more than 1 minute?
Okay.
Ngiyabonga sihlalo. Yazi sihlalo, khona into lana ufuna icatshangwe. Yabona njoba sila, sizohlalela abantu. Secondly, njoba sila, asiqala ukuba zi-member njoba sila eParliament. Sisuka kude, siyakwazi ukubona kuyimanje. Lana kusafuneka kwenza ucwani bonke laba ODDG noDG kade bekhona ke babuye benzela bazositshela singaqhamuki manje badlale lento kamashibhesha egcineni bese sizofunzwa ngalaba bantu ngoba uyabona uma sesingena la kusukela nayizolo njengoba de sino-SIU ziningi izimali ezidliwe la. And le ndaba ukuthi umuntu uzofika ganga eminyangweni bese yathathwa yofihlwa lapha silethelo omunye ngeke siyimele la manzi sihlale sikhuluma ngawo ngifike kuwena la ngizokutshela ukuthi kuyimanje abantu abanawo amanzi phansi. Ubugebengu bukhona kulo mnyango and ayikho indlela ofuna sibuhloniphise ngayo. Ngiyajabula if abanye sinabo la bezokwazi bese ngibonga ngalabama-AG laba bakhona. Because uma ubabheka ba into abayikhulumayo bacishe benze lento bekumina ebingikade ngixaka ukuthi why bebonke kuthiwa laba bathe ma benze i-odida bathole ukuthi ku-clean bengivele nginicuphile mina ngifuna ukunibona ukuthi nizothini. Kuyimanje ziningi imali edliwe la kunamakhesi akonandoni imali khona eyithinto 30 million zokuningi esokubala la. Mina ngiyocela sihlale singelinye ilanga usinikeze isikhathi eside nani esizokwazi ukukhuluma khona ngoba mina ngiyibona into esizovuma thina ukuthi lokufakwa lo abekudlweni ngayo imali kuqeda ukuthiwa nya bese kuyathathwa yofakwa lapha silethe lo munye silana ngokuthi thina sithethwe abantu phansi abahluphekayo. Ngiyabonga.
Can you paraphrase?
Thank you, Chair. We have been in this portfolio for a long time. We have been in this portfolio.
You're paraphrasing.
Yeah?
You're paraphrasing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The member has been in this portfolio for a long time and understands how things operate. She feels that there is a need to investigate all those DGs and DDGs who have been there before, instead of dealing with the new people now. There is a lot of corruption that has happened in this department and a lot of investigation that needs to happen. Also has a concern, why was the clean audit? There is about 30 million rand that has been wasted in this department. And next time, it will be important to get more time to engage with issues by the members.
Okay, thank you. Sorry? I am going to give you your rightful time to speak. And if you don't mind, direct your responses to the specific questions or other issues raised both by the AG and also by the members of parliament in response to issues raised by the AG in their submission. If you can be prompt and to the issues without much of any preamble or introduction. Thank you, sir.
I suggest that we
respond in writing, what I will do is leave the document that I have with the secretariat so they can make copies for members.
Can you respond to the issues raised by the AG's office and their members, if you don't mind? Thank you, sir.
Yeah, but he raised Mopani, and when I start talking about Mopani, it's going to take a long time, Chairperson, and other issues. I don't know what you
We are about. Here in the main on an issue that talks to the standoff
okay.
between yourselves and the AG's office. That's what we are here for.
Okay.
If you don't mind rising specifically to those issues.
Okay, Chairperson. The standoff came mainly on the issue of irregular expenditure. On the WTE side, the issue was raised by the fact that we've always had a list in the department that we advertise at the beginning of every year, and that list that we advertise at the beginning of the year, and companies then write to the department, and we categorize the departments, and then on a regular basis, when there's job in the department, companies get given the jobs from the list.
Chairperson.
Sorry.
Chairperson.
Mm.
I see you. This is really not on.
I just got this.
I'm just calling this point of order that maybe what we should.
What are the issues? Sorry, I just.
No. I was now talking about the, you know, the process. We appoint these, you get these companies. Chair, it's not how it must be done.
Okay, let's.
Well,
let's
want to suggest, Chair.
Yeah.
I want to suggest that I think acting accounting officer is correct. Maybe that. What we should do, Chair, is that the AG has spoken. The AG has raised a number of issues. The department has noted. Right? We can then maybe agree, Chair, that the department can go back. There's nothing wrong. They're here. There's no fruitless expenditure. They're here. They've heard for themselves. They can go back and prepare a presentation. Do you know what we'll do on our side, Chair? We'll make a recommendation. Because that's what we're going to do after this meeting. You know, they've noted the issues. We have heard what the AG has raised. We have questioned the AG. We're happy about the presentation of the AG. We'll make our recommendation moving forward. I think that's how we must leave it, Chair. Because the story that the accounting officer is going, the acting accounting officer is going to take us through, Chair, is not going to take us anywhere. Let them come back on record. Let them come back on record to us. Then we know what we are talking about.
Chairperson, may I just make a comment?
Okay, members, what is very clear is that, you see, my main interest here, there are two. One, the audit reports have been signed off. As we speak now, the annual report has since been presented. Granted, the department had their own issues about whether or not, you know, irregular or fruitless or wasteful. Now, these are issues that must continue. But what happened, was it yesterday, when we were listening to the department or to the toward the AG's office, if I'm not mistaken, the other week. The matters related to that standoff, they have a background, which is important to me, that say, as we speak now, that report has since been signed off. As to what happens to those are issues that are being, to a point where, no, it was the department, it was actually the acting DG, Mr. Mkhize, who was saying they have since found whatever document that was looked for by AG, but after the deadline. But for me, that's now after the fact, which is the point you're raising. 60 days, nothing was found. After 60 days, they suddenly have found the document. So which is an anomaly. Now, it's something that you are dealing with. So that's what I would really want us to deal with. But of course, the issues have been raised, and the department clearly is not able to respond to the issues now in the manner in which members would have loved the department to raise in responses to the, or rather in response to the issues raised by the AG's office. That's where we are now. Despite the fact that they've been invited to respond to the issues. But Mr. Person?
Chairperson, I think it would be appropriate for us to wait for the Ethic and Risk Committee to complete their work and then give us a report. And then we will know whether the departments were right or wrong. So we can in our report say that there is, in our BRRR report say that, you know, there is still a process ongoing. But we await for the outcome. We know what we want to say in our report, but the truth of the matter is that the Ethic and Risk Committee, they're not completed on the complaints. And let's wait for that. But Chairperson, what I want to put on the table, what we've heard today from the AG, what we heard from the SIU and National Treasury yesterday, those three institutions are on the same page with the department. Nothing different. So Chair, you know, eventually for the department to come up with something different that the SIU's got, Chairperson, we were told bluntly yesterday, you won't see projects from this department that are using their money to pay previous year's accruals. Okay. That was National Treasury told us that yesterday.
Which vindicates ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay, what is clear, members, is that we are proceeding with our report. And let us thank the AG's office, led by the AG himself, and also thank the department. We attempted, but it didn't go far. Let's thank everybody for having made it. That shall give us time as a committee, probably 30, 45 minutes at most, to run through the report itself for adoption. We have been having the copies to ourselves. Let us take through that process and then conclude that process. Thank you very much again, AG and your team. And thank you, Mr. Matlangu, and your team. This part of our meeting is done. Then we are to continue with our own session. Thank you, sir. Thank you.
it is part of a process that shall have seen the money bills being enacted, giving effect to a constitutional provision of the role of a member of parliament in a budgetary process. The aim is to make an impact in a budget process, especially insofar as medium-term is concerned, medium-term budget policy statement is concerned. And as such, therefore, those kinds of recommendations shall be expected to be impacted upon. We have heard this process before. We are continuing. Whether or not we are able to fit in into that budget cycle is a question that we are consistently dealing with. That's the background to this process that we are beginning. The annual report has been presented by the department and also the entities insofar as Water Research Commission, TCTA, and the Catchment Management Agency, two of those. And we have had a process with the respective institutions within government department that deals with the compliance and governance, for us to be able to be empowered more in us having to reach any recommendations that are informed. That's the background which we find ourselves in. We have a page number one which is with us, if any comments. This report, or rather draft, has been with us for quite some time. And I'm very confident that by 1:30 we shall have been done. Any comments on page number one? If nothing else members have to say, comment wise. Okay. Nothing on page number one? Issues are there, straightforward. Still talk about constitution, empowering the National Assembly, and the scope of oversight of the committee. Of course, we're taking away there the draft budgetary and also putting there the date, which is today, 2nd of November. The year is 2017. Any typos there? It's a straightforward one. Thank you. Page number two. There you're dealing with the mandate of the department and the overview of the achievements and the or not and challenges related to attainment of strategic outcome-oriented goals. There are five. They moved away from three. Page three. There, those goals are mentioned. Goal number one, 60% achievement. Goal number five, 100% achievement. The programs are five. They are mentioned there. That's very important. Program number one, administration and unqualified audit outcome for 2016-17 was not achieved. There's a whole range of those in program number three that have not been completed. Program number five, the National Mine Water Regulation Program has not also been achieved. Number four, page number four.
Number five. I must also mention that this is what we are going through here is what the department shall have presented to us. So these are not our own views per se as a committee. This is also not an analysis of what shall have been presented. That is still to come. The department is very specific. It says that program number one, they spend 97%. Program number two, they spend 92% and 93%. Program number three, the department shall have spent 100%, 99.6%. Which has been the major focus of 12.1 billion rand. Program number four, on page seven, there was an overspending there. 137% was spent. There was an over expenditure. Program number five, 85% or 86%. Which means, therefore, that we are flagging program number four and program number three as areas of interest. Page number eight. Point is made that the department couldn't request for a rollover as it exceeded its budget allocation. But of course also there's an issue of the accruals. Page 9.
Page on page 348. The figures differ. It shows a total income of 11.797865, total expenditure of 15,401,744 billion, and deficit of 3.6 billion. So I don't know the extent to which we put down the acting accounting officers' information, and thereafter mention that in the financial statements these are the figures, and the extent to which the Auditor General also found these kind of discrepancies in undertaking their work.
Can we follow what Mrs. Dowd is making reference to? What Mrs. Dowd is saying in the annual report, making reference to the respective pages, what has been signed off by the AG's office talks to the revenue that is there in black and white. That talks to 11.7 billion compared to the 15.4 billion rand expenditure. That gives you, that's now talking to the water trading entity account of the two main, of the two accounts. There, the deficit is 3.6 billion. But in what is referred to here, in this document, that figure is different to this figure. Here it is 5.8 billion compared to what we have here. That's what she is pointing us to as a discrepancy on the part of the department. We've got, but what has been signed off here is 3.6 billion. That is a deficit compared to what was read to us here, submitted by the accounting officer, which is 5.8 billion rand as a deficit. In other words, they spent more than what they received. Thanks for that. Part of that shall constitute part of our recommendation going forward. Thanks for that. That sharp observation. Okay, so we are now on page 11. Page 10, sorry. I wonder whether that figure then will not have any cumulative effect on any of these future figures that we are to talk about. And also for themselves as well as the department as a plan going forward with all the challenges that they are confronted with. Any comments on that? No comments on that for now. Okay, let's flag that. Page number 11.
page number 12, page number 13. Page number 12, sorry, that consolidated irregular expenditure figure there is stated at 4.1 billion. I must also mention, members, that next week on Tuesday, SCOPA is engaging with the Department of Water and Sanitation on this very same issue of irregular expenditure, which is 4.1 billion rand. So some of us might wish to make an attendance to that. Page number 13. Page number 14. Me of the two figures. Granted, here we're dealing with the two accounts. One is main account, and another one is a water trading entity. Insofar as the irregular expenditure for the main account, we're standing at 4.1 billion. Now, this is a different figure on WTE, where it talks to 4.3 billion. Can you comment on that? Sounds obvious and straightforward, but if you don't mind. There on WTE, it is very specific. It talks about contract extension without proper delegation, and also talks about goods and services. We did receive a copy upon request from the department that details down all the expenditures to a certain amount. Any comments? You.
Is that, I think we can proceed with it, but note it under the recommendation. Because I think the area that we have done under the recommendation, we have spent more time on the department rather than unless Sharon will advise otherwise, that we have managed to cover a recommendation around the issue of water trading entity. It's an area that it requires a special resolution on it.
If you look at the main account, it's purely money from the fiscus.
Yeah.
The water trading entity generates revenue, as well as they get an augmentation from the main account within Program 3, Water Infrastructure Development, to undertake the work. In the irregular expenditure, what happened was that the department gave service providers certain jobs or certain tenders. However, they based it on the fact that they're going to be generating revenue, and this did not happen.
Okay, no, that's fine. The aim was to clarify ourselves on those two accounts. And they both have these irregular expenditures. One is for 4.3 billion rand, another one is 4.1.
Page 14.
15, actually. Sorry, Mama. Yeah, Mama.
It can be like page 14. Yeah, we regular expenditure. Land of Tolagala Congo put in service. We Kona Congo to Bagwas Guti Bakokele and Ali Woksaina in contract extension. Who was going to Ghana and Con? And this will and Nananga sent a foot go fruitless. They are fruitless, wasteful expenditure. Nakhona kukhona into ingazwe bengayithola ukuthi kusho ukuthini lapha. Ngoba uma uthi uhambisana nalento, khombisa zona ezinye izinto ebesikhuluma ngazo ukuthi kukhona izinto ezagcina kukhokheleka khona izinto engenabo ufakazi bokuthi into ezi-right. Angichazele.
She needs clarity in those two items. What was going on when goods were not signed for, and yet they were and that they were paid for.
I think that's one of the issues that the Auditor General picked up quite critically. With the way in which the department was undertaking its goods and services. They argued that although there were no signed contracts on certain, and we need to maybe investigate specifically on the kinds of goods and services, when the Office of the Auditor General asked for the evidence, those were not available. And in that instance, it becomes denoted as irregular expenditure. And then fruitless and wasteful expenditure, there was an amount that the department didn't pay for its electricity bill to Eskom and to municipalities. So maybe we can draft a recommendation on that as well, to begin to look at the department giving us details on the reasons that they are not paying Eskom and municipalities. Within certain time frames, we can look at that.
Okay. The intention, once again, of us engaging in this exercise, at the end, it is about us recommending. Granted, we need to be clarified, we need to understand, but without losing sight of our intention. There is no department that is going to answer on any of these issues, Mama. So we had at best to have ourselves to recommend.
Page 16, sorry.
On this specific issue about catchment management agency, at what point did we, just to recap, at what point were we getting, or did we get the department indicating a new 10? Initially, they were to expand into 9 CMAs, and later it's now going to be one consolidated entity. At what point is this in this financial year we are at? Is this part of the annual report that we got? In this annual report. Okay. No, that's fine. Okay, page 17, 18.
page 19. Sorry.
Now, these are responses by the department on our engagement with them. From page 19 to page 20. From that page to page that deals with recommendations. Sorry. Unless we have any specific issues might wish to lift as part of our recommendations out of those responses by the department. We have both responses by the department and also responses by the entities. All what we are keen on out of these two are issues that we can lift up as part of our recommendations, if any.
Just on the issue of catchment management agencies.
Can we start off first with page 19 on the department itself? Any issues there? You find page 20. It's page 32 of the report itself. We are on page 20 now. Thank you. And then I guess members are rushing us to page 32. Page 21? So that talks to compliance.
Yes, but on the catchment management agency.
Mm-hmm.
The department, there was a question from members, and the department responded accordingly. And members were quite frustrated that they got the information so late.
Okay. I guess there the potential recommendation could be that the committee would wish to be taken on board on that whole process as soon as is possible, and the rationale behind that decision. 24. Sorry? Yeah. I mean, just an example there, to get department together with water boards, as if there's no comma there, you know, 7.1.8. Just those tiny areas. Page 25. More of a recommendation. Let's flag it or note it, but that shall be more for recommendations. Now, what we are dealing here is issues that the department shall have had in response to the issues that we're engaging them with. Page 25. One of the issues that on page 25, they're on top, lack of oversight by the department or by implementing agents. Again, the issue of, which is part of our recommendation, I would imagine, the issue that relates to the construction unit comes into play, with the department making use of these, over, these implementing agents over a period of time, whilst expected to be emergency. But what has become very clear is that these are norms as we speak now. That's where the money gets siphoned out. Outsourcing. Okay, those are some of the recommendations. Page 26. The issue about the regulator, as we speak now, the department is both the referee and the player. Player and the referee. Especially as it relates to tariffs. This is something that has been coming for quite some time. It perhaps could be part of your recommendations about speeding up that process so that we can have these tariffs being dictated upon by an independent regulator. Page 27.
Before that, Chairperson, on the same page.
Yeah.
On the role of the department as a sector leader and regulator, you will see that there are bullets there. I think there are almost six of them, if I'm not mistaken, which deal with the capacity in the municipalities. If we can put a recommendation, you will see that there's a problem with engineers and scientists, and also in technical capacity in issue of the management of wastewater treatment system. you will see the bullet number, the last bullet number six there, and the one before that. If we can put a recommendation of the capacity in the municipalities on the issue of wastewater treatment and so forth.
Well, one of the recommendations, I think it was Mrs. Mahavane who raised the issue about the lack of capacity in municipalities. Whilst we have the construction unit with a lot of staff there that is not being utilized, whilst the processes are afoot on the part of the department, this issue about capacity in the municipalities, it becomes more urgent. For us to be able, I guess that's part of the recommendations what Mrs. Mahaban was raising, which talks directly to the issues they are raising, Mr. Mgun.
Okay.
Is it in line with what we call devolution of the construction unit to municipalities? Will that be the correct approach that we take? Because there's this big issue that is going to be in line with our recommendation on program 3. Every project that to be now done internally, you must take that step. So.
Yeah.
But it's very clear that from the presentation of both the AG, SIU, that program is open for corruption. And we have this capacity that has been undermined by the department. And they have confirmed that they have capacity. Maybe it is not the right time to say construction unit, and we recommend, should be the implementer of the programs of the department, project within the department, and then devolve it to create capacity, technical capacity at the local level. You now bring in collaboration of local government using that capacity. But we may want to look at it in that line, maybe, because this point is a very important point of your municipalities are just sitting with, I know that the local government responsibility. What are the dire interests there to create capacity? We are sitting with capacity, but we are not utilizing. 3,000 men and women who are employed in the construction unit. So something that we may want as we move with this point. Sharon, I think you'll notice that we have to create a recommendation in that line. For us to cap corruption, but to unleash the capacity of the department that is there and that has been sort of put aside for now, we'll have to ignite that capacity of the department.
Maybe that would be a type of a typical secondment by the department to those needy municipalities. It's a secondment that is genuinely aimed at taking us forward, given all the challenges that are there in the municipalities. Exactly the point. COCTA picks up the tab, the bill. COCTA picks up the bill, so that it is very specific. It's government to government partnership.
That's correct.
It's public to public partnership. Unlike having had all until today, public private, it's not even a partnership, it's business. So there we're talking here about public local government partnerships. Okay, page 27. Takes us through to responses by the entities. Again, there you're talking about war and leaks program. Page 28.
Chairperson, I don't know on the issue of war on this. You'll remember that we did not see it on the APP of the department as a standalone item. While it has been reported by the Water Research Commission, shouldn't we put as a recommendation that the department must put it, there must be proper planning on that one. They place it on the APP, the next APP, for those we might find ourselves in a problem.
Chairperson, can I ask, could we rethink the war on lead? Where it really belongs to the department?
Local government.
It's local government, Chairperson. It should go to COCTA. They must manage it. If we then do training for our construction unit assist, they will pay us for it. It's exactly the same with the bucket eradication. We must get rid of the bucket eradication within our department. It must go to COCTA with the money, because we're going to sit here, we'll come maybe in for next turn, we will still start afresh with bucket eradication.
Can I get clarity, Chair, on this point? How is this department gazetted? It's the Department of Water and Sanitation.
Mm.
So sanitation becomes your budget again.
But it now is bulk. Only bulk.
What? How is this department gazetted? What is it called?
Water and sanitation.
But it's only bulk infrastructure.
Sanitation is bulk infrastructure.
No, it's your wastewater treatment plants, building, maintaining.
In fact, I can safely say that there is concurrence insofar as sanitation is concerned.
Mm.
At national level and also at local level. At local level, typically with the water situation is concerned, there it talks about reticulation. And then the department talks about bulk. It's something that we need to begin to think about quite thoroughly as to what is it that is the mandate of this department. That question must directly answer this very issue you are raising, whether or not bucket constitutes bulk or it constitutes local connection, and whether that bucket constitutes that local connection. It's something that we need to, typically also with the war on leaks. The war on leaks, where leaks are happening in the main, it is in that local municipality, but also the other issue that we rarely, rarely attend to is a breakdown of those leaks. We are told it's 37%. We're told the value of that is 7.2 billion rand. But what is entailed in that 37% leak? I'm very keen on that. And perhaps if we can be able to say to the department, whilst we are recommending on war on leaks, but also getting to talk about the department expected of it, to give us a breakdown of that 37% leakage. I think that is a breakdown. I see Mr. Person looking at the time. Okay, let's move faster. Mr. Ngune.
On the same 27. You will remember that there was TCTA, a water research, spoke about the drought intervention, and they seem to have had some preparations on this intervention. Can we recommend that we say that the department, or rather all the what you call this state entities, should have a plan? Because if you remember why these boreholes were just mushrooming, even where there was no water. It's because of a plan. There was no plan when say drought of such nature came into being. If we can put this as a recommendation that the departments or other entities must have a plan in case such calamity comes. Thank you.
Okay. Just one clarity. Mrs. Dawood. On page 27, it says funding has been apportioned from energy and waste. It's supposed to be energy and water sector, not waste. It's supposed to be energy and water sector, education, training, that sector there. For this purpose, can that be a true reflection? Aren't they only there to train? They don't necessarily have money budgeted for this one leaks.
Wanting to appropriate money. I know that they wanted to pay almost 600 million to the country. And that CETA had to be linked with higher education. For now, that training that is happening is not linked. It's part of what the suspended Editor General was arguing. It's not linked. It's a standalone there in the corner that gets funded and its operation is under the
higher education.
It's not under. That the institution that they've set up there is not under, it's not even registered. And then that's why it's an area that requires a thorough, proper planning linked with higher education to provide skills of the future. Now, what is happening is that it is coordinated by Rentwater. It's an entity of the department. It does not, and Rentwater is it's not even a national entity. It's a water board, you know. So the problem we are dealing with here, Chair, is that you have money, 1.1 billion that has gone out, 1.1 billion that is not accounted for. It's not accounted for. And you still have to pay CETA. You know, you can't pay CETA. CETA are established by legislation. They are funded by government. How do we pay them back again? We can't. So I agree with what the point that is made by Param Guni earlier, that maybe what we should do is to ask the department, this project must wait until, well, if we agree with you, we continue, and there's no accountability check, 1.1 billion is one another degree, no one has accounted for. They need to put this thing in their APP in the next week. The current spending will have to cease, so there's no accountability. So in the recommendation, of but I'm saying that the point that you are making is that that water CETA, that CETA, is self-funded CETA. It cannot be funded by department. We have not appropriated money to enough for. War on leaks has been pronounced, the presidential pronouncement, department must operationalize that war on leaks if you want to make it. But if it's a local government, we must say that that matter is the responsibility of local government in collaboration with Department of Water and Transition, coordinated and supported by CETA, water and sanitation, whatever CETA you call it.
I still wanted to get clarity. This statement says funding has been apportioned from energy and water sector education training authority for this one leaks purpose. Can that be a fact that there is a budget on that CETA for water, for worn leaks? I think I find it odd, that statement. You cannot expect to have a CETA having a budget for this project or program. Theirs is to train together with the Rentwater and also with the Water Research Commission. Theirs is only to train, and the budget is within the department. That's my understanding. Yeah, but I'm saying the money is paid out of the department, which is an unmandated item, unfunded mandate. That's the word I'm looking for. Comment, Mrs. Dawood? Mr. Manufula?
I think what the Water Research Commission said that on that day is that the this CETA has a responsibility to train plumbers, not specifically for water-worn leaks. So that is what this statement means. So they are not saying the budget that CETA has is for water-worn leaks. But then through the, discussions, then somebody brought the issue of water-worn leaks. So, but the statement does not refer to the training for plumbers to deal with water-worn leaks.
So this statement is wrong?
It's not wrong.
It's right?
Yes.
They have a budget?
They have got a budget to train plumbers.
That is now the CETA?
The CETA, yes.
What, Sharon?
I just looked up the issue.
Speak to the mic if you don't mind. Thank you.
I just looked up the issue, and it says that the Water Research Commission and the Energy and Water Sector Education Training Authority sign a collaboration agreement to drive a coherent water skills ecosystem and pipeline in South Africa. That was on the 15th of the third month in 2017, which means that there is that kind of agreement between those two systems. And one of the projects was to provide training to plumbers.
So that statement stands, Mr. Chauva?
Because of the I wanted to make a proposal that we move for the adoption with the adoption of the report with corrections, obviously, with amendments that we can make in truth. So meaning that we can have a situation where ourselves, Madia, yourself, and whoever that can have an issue can come and speak into that thing. You know, we can continue with the recommendation, and meaning that in principle they've adopted the report.
But what I would like to do is that if we want to add the recommendations, we should send it to Maria that could distribute this to members, and if there's no problem with those, it's just been added.
I second it, Jefferson.
You are thirding.
You are thirding or forwarding.
Forwarding.
Yeah.
I tell you that there is no opposition to that recommendation, Madia.
Can I just ask though that the recommendations, when they come, they actually come sooner rather than later, because the expectation is that as soon as the committee adopts the report, we're actually going to ATC it. No, we shouldn't delay in ATCing it. And also, in order to adopt it, we need a mover and a seconder, which we don't have right now.
But what Mr. Chauke was saying, he was moving for adoption.
I second.
And then Mr. Basson was seconded.
And I deaded it.
And then Mr. Mbuni had deaded it.
Jefferson, we can have a closing date for tomorrow, or let's say then Monday at 5. If there's no further recommendations that comes in, it stays as it is.
Okay, can we, before end of today, we forward those recommendations, added recommendations to Madia? Whilst we are seated in the house, can we email the bus through to Madia? Thank you. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.